Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Remembered, you know, he was an Everton player, Andy King, for from what my uncle told me and from what, you know, my granddad and everyone told me as well. It was a real shame that he sort of, he passed away, you know, so suddenly as well, wasn't it? I mean, you know, it was. I mean, well known for his goal against Liverpool. I always get, you know, I always think it's a shame that he got remembered just for that. But that was his one standout moment.
Getting asked to get off the pitch as well,
yeah,
that busy.
Well, that's probably more famous than the goal. But what a hit that was! That's Ray Clements, you know, top corner.
Real great memories. I think his name will always be synonymous with every football club. And
absolutely.
Obviously, we mentioned that at the start. It's not the best way to start our show, but we need to definitely pay our respects to a real true blue in Andy King.
Absolutely, thoughts go out with his family and his friends as well.
Anyway, to matters on the pitch, Mark, and it wasn't the best start to the 2014-15 season. Yeah. I mean, there was a buzz about the place, but I think our preparation come under the spotlight, didn't it? With Roberto going out to the World Cup, doing a bit of punditry. The preparation for our pre-season, the spotlight has been sort of turned on that over the course of the season, as that we were maybe caught a bit short.
I agree. I think to from where I'm standing, complete complacency had set in. Because, you know, we saw Roberto going off, and everyone was buzzing with Everton at that time, and, you know, we thought we were on the verge of another great season. And to me, he went off to Brazil with not so much as a pre-season planned. I thought it was incredibly, for a guy who's sort of so prepared and so thorough in his work, you know, that we've seen 8 hours of sleep, strict and everything, I thought it was incredibly lax to go away to Brazil without, you know, we had to the season undercooked as a result, didn't we?
Was it a bit complacent then on his part? Because, I mean, he hit the ground running when he first came in, Roberto, and we all know about his first season in charge.
Yeah.
How fantastic it was. The feel-good factor was there throughout the summer. Obviously, we made signings that increased that feel-good factor, but
yeah.
I think we maybe were a bit caught short. We looked a bit unfit towards the start of the season, and although we did make impressive signings in the window, we were a bit slow getting on. I mean, we got off to a slow start in Roberto's first season.
Yeah,
we
did.
In his first season, and we eventually came good. But as we all know, this season didn't turn out to be such a success. But to the transfers in the summer, Mark, we signed Barry on a permanent deal, given a 3-year contract, which maybe raised a few eyebrows. Lukaku came in, obviously we signed him for a reported 28 million, whereas I don't know how much of that actually went to Chelsea up front. But Samuel Eto'o came. We also signed Christian Atsu, Brendan Galloway, Mo Bezic as well. He had an impressive World Cup, if you think back.
He did.
It seems like a lifetime ago, doesn't it, really?
But, it's a year ago that he was doing his displays against Brazil, I think it was Brazil, wasn't it, that he stood out? Was it?
And Messi as well.
Not Brazil, yeah.
But Eto'o, I think Eto'o's, I mean, Lukaku was a statement in itself, but Eto'o signing for Everton was incredible in itself, wasn't it? We all know how short-lived it was, but it was amazing to see him, wasn't it, in the Royal Blue shirt.
Do you know what? It seems a lifetime ago, Eto'o playing for Everton, right? It doesn't feel like last season at all. When it was first sort of mooted that we were signing him, I openly didn't want him to sign. I thought I'd sooner we signed a hungry, young, you know, talented, you know, player rather than Eto'o, who's past it. But then, to be honest, how fickle. When I seen him in an Everton shirt, to see a world star like that signed for Everton, I was completely starstruck. This could be great.
Just for the hype caused, yeah. I mean, it was almost surreal, wasn't it? We're not used to such big names. I mean,
no.
We had a few big names during Walter Smith's days, the likes of Ginola and Gazza coming to the club. Maybe Mark Hughes, yeah, obviously past the sell-by date by then. But
yeah.
Maybe you could say the same about Eto'o, but I think, I mean, he's obviously still playing now at the top level over in Italy. But it was a real surprise, but it was a real coup, I thought. Something that could have complemented what we already have, but obviously
things didn't work out, which we'll
come to a bit later on. But that was the summer. Definitely a feel-good factor, Mark.
Yeah.
Definitely a buzz about the place. Signing players. We didn't really get rid of anyone. A few youngsters or maybe fringe players, the likes of Maggie Guy, Matty Kennedy, Velios.
Yeah.
Those who were sort of never were going to make it. So there was definitely a buzz going into the new season, but we obviously going to the month of August.
Yeah.
We started away at Leicester, then we hosted Arsenal and Chelsea in successive home games before the bank holiday. Mark, taking me back to that Leicester game again, feels like a lifetime ago. Aidan McGeady, probably his finest moment of the season, wasn't it, in his first game?
He's got a terrific goal, if you remember. He stuck it in the top corner, and to be fair, that day he played some naturally fantastic football, particularly in the first half. But, you know, it was ridiculous the way we sat back in that second half. It was just completely asked for Leicester to get an equaliser there, didn't they? But Everton played some stuff that, you know, hard back to last season. We thought we'd just picking up where we left off here. It was fantastic. And, you know, just what Chris Wood scored, and I think the rot set in right from that moment, to be honest with you, on our season.
Yeah. Exactly. I think I remember watching that game in the Croc, and I remember being so annoyed because of the late equaliser, because we did take the lead twice in that game, and Naismith got the second, but and maybe that sort of set the tone for the season. And as you say, McGeady scored a world, and he didn't do much else, to be honest, for the next 9 months. So anyway, on to what I'm saying, we're not going to go through the games individually, but it's going to be hard not to, but we'll try and run through them in blocks, really. So the Arsenal and Chelsea game was back. Arsenal, probably our finest 45 minutes of the season.
Again, straight back to last season when we completely outmanoeuvred Arsenal at Goodison. It was the same again that at Goodison Park. Was playing some fantastic football, looking $1 million. But again, it was the lack of fitness that sort of put paid to us, didn't it, that day? Again, I think we were defending that far back. We were in the park stand at one moment.
The defence was having a chat, weren't they? Yeah? On the concourse?
Absolutely, yeah. I think they were, you know, pieing a pint time, but it was one of them where, you know, had we been halfway fit to start the season, we
could have saw that game
there.
Out. Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, well, instead of two.
And then Arsenal obviously fought back. The following week, Mark, I think it was when probably Diego Costa announced his name in the Premier League, wasn't it? 6-3, we all remember that one. We got beat by Chelsea. Obviously, Chelsea went on to win the title, so it maybe doesn't feel as bad, but...
Yeah.
You know, Morales scored, Eto'o got off the mark that day too, but they were just too good, Chelsea were.
Far too good, we were far too, well, the defensive rot had set in from the previous two games, but also, you know, I mean, sat down and we were all down in that game, I think Ivanovic scored after like 50 seconds or something
like
that.
Well, it was 2-0, wasn't it, after 5 minutes?
5 minutes, yeah. But to be honest, it was another game, right, where I left, we obviously got spanked, 6-3, but it was a game where I felt, hang on a minute, we had something else going forward here. We looked great again going forward, didn't we? We could hurt Chelsea.
So basically you're saying we've got Tim Howard in goal, but we can...
Yeah, I was basically thinking, if we just tighten up defensively, it's still there for us here.
Yeah.
I remember still being positive at the end of that game.
Yeah.
You know...
Well, it was still early days in the season, to be honest, Mark. You know, we'd drawn the opening two games, and, you know, losing to Chelsea 6-3. But they were obviously classed, the likes of Nemanja Matic, John Terry, Ivanovic. We've seen Diego Costa, what he's gone on to do this season.
Absolutely, you know, Fabregas.
Players that can really hurt, you know, assists, goals. They've got goals right across the team, Chelsea, and that's where Mourinho's been successful. But following on from that, Mark, we entered the month of September.
Yeah.
Now, we played West Brom away, Wolfsburg at home, and Crystal Palace at home. In probably the space of just over a week. The West Brom game, Lukaku scored, Morales scored. That was our first win of the season. Lukaku obviously scored against his former side.
Yeah.
Good win.
Great win. If I remember, Morales scored as well that day, and we looked like much better, much tighter defensively. We looked like, you know, we were ready to, like, it sort of added to the belief after the Chelsea game that, you know, we only had to get it half right defensively for me. We had more than enough quality going forward. And, you know, that was a rare moment of optimism when we won that game. So, God, this is the springboard now for the rest of the season. And Wolfsburg at home confirmed that. Although, you know, if you remember that Wolfsburg game,
4-1
was the most flattering result you'll ever see. I think it should have been about 15-6 to Wolfsburg. That might be absolutely destroyed in the second half.
Well, I think the opening three games, Mark, we conceded 10 goals. So to keep a clean sheet was another plus as well. Obviously, Lukaku against West Brom, he didn't celebrate, I remember that.
Yeah.
And then I think that was a Sunday, that game. The following Thursday, we played Wolfsburg, as you just mentioned, Mark. And, you know, it was a great result. And to see what Wolfsburg have gone on to this season, to think we actually went on to beat them home and away, was some achievement, really. But it probably proved what our confidence in Europe, didn't it? That, as you say, we probably with the worst side on the night.
Yeah.
You know, to come away 4-1 in emphatic style was great, wasn't it?
It gave us that belief that we can hurt teams in Europe, didn't it? You know, like you say, it shouldn't have been a 4-1 win for us, really, if Wolfsburg had took half their chances. So it gave us that firm belief that we can hurt anybody in Europe. Wolfsburg are an excellent team and are an excellent team.
Sure.
You know, so, yeah.
Well, I'm just looking here, Mark. We're going to end up doing these games individually. You know, we're not going to get away from it. You can't can't ignore it, though, can you? We'll try and get through it as quick as possible anyway before anyone switches off and goes to sleep. But Crystal Palace, Denmark, they've got some sort of voodoo hold over us, haven't they, by beating us 3-2.
It's a 2-3 voodoo as well. Yeah. It's a specific voodoo they've got over us.
But that was another Sunday game. Lukaku and Bain scored on that particular afternoon, but they came away with all 3 points. And the likes of Balas, he tore us another one, didn't he, again?
He's just world-class Balas. No, he's not world-class, sorry, that's overstretching it. But Balas, he just knows how to play against
us. Make him look world-class.
We make him look world-class. He's a player I would dearly love, and good as some that, to be honest with you. I think he'd make the world a difference to our team. But like you say, Palace just had, I think they've got the measure of madness more than, they just know how to play against us, don't they? You know, they've had numerous successes against us.
Warnock, Pulis. Yeah, just done it, haven't
just
they?
Had no problem with it.
Yeah.
But again, it was a game where it cemented just how disappointing the season we were going to have. And, you know, we had a rough start. That was a game where we really needed to kick on. That two good results. That was a winnable game.
Yeah.
To lose in that manner, you know. Just, again,
well, that was a real chance to kick on from the West Brom and Wolfsburg victories, wasn't it? But obviously, looking back, it was a missed opportunity. Following on from that, to the end of September, Mark, we faced Swansea away in the League Cup and Liverpool away in the League. Two very, very different games. But let's start with the Swansea game. Disappointing again to go out of the League Cup, wasn't it?
We went out first row. It's like we didn't even try it. It was a game where they reminded me of when we played Tottenham away under Moyes, where it was so clear that we were going to get beat in the League Cup. I just don't know, you know, what it is in the mindset of the players. Like you say, we've gone 20 years without a trophy. You think that, you
is it the mindset of the manager, though?
Possibly, yeah. I agree. Obviously filter down onto the pitch. But it's like, you know, we've got to be starting to want to make an impression in the League Cup. Just because our history says we're absolutely useless in that competition doesn't mean we shouldn't be prioritising. Swansea played well on the night, but really I don't think they did anything special to beat us that night.
No. I think it was just a routine victory in midweek, wasn't it? It was a Tuesday night. We crashed out of the League Cup, maybe just prioritising the Europa League, but I think I've said it openly in the past, I'd take a League Cup victory just because it's silverware, it stops the rot, and we've won something. You know what I mean?
Absolutely,
fair enough, we were in the Europa League and we gave it a good go, and unfortunately came to a sour end in the Europa League, but at least have a go in the League Cup, you know, get the fans excited. You could have a trophy by the time March comes, so.
And then the season's a memorable one, come rain or shine. Well, you know, obviously a lot of rain in our season, but to be honest, it highlighted to me what went wrong in pre-season, that we were sort of prioritising Europa over things. We didn't do enough in the summer transfer window, so we ended up, like you say, not really giving a monkey's about the League Cup, which is totally wrong.
Yeah. Anyway, on to the derby. Always a big game between Liverpool and Everton. At Anfield, Gerrard scored and Jagielka scored. Now, that's an absolute world equaliser. What about Gerrard's goal? Now, we're not going to talk about too much. You know, Tim Howard will be having a nightmare if he listens to this. But it's a bit of any questions asked, shall we say, with Gerrard scoring. Tim Howard a fault.
You just transported me back. Howard was in the middle of his goal for that one, I think, wasn't he? It was, you know, Gerrard's record with free kicks. I remember him sticking one under the wall one time up at Anfield, didn't he? Howard's position for that, I think at least two goalkeepers would have stopped that, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, well, I think he would have got to it, definitely. But Howard was in the middle of his goal. He positioned his wall all wrong. It's like he'd taken a leave of his centres. And Gerrard just put it in like it was a penalty.
Was he high-fiving himself? Well, what about Jagielka? Let's not dwell on that. What about Jagielka's equaliser?
Tyus Brownlee works it, gets it crossing. Mignolet doesn't come. Eto's not there. McGeady will keep it in. Down by the left-hand corner flag. Into the penalty area. Crossed in by McGeady. Naismith's there. Headed away. Reaches Jagielka. What a shot! Oh, what a goal! Stoppage time has scored not the goal of this season, Graham Stewart.
It's the goal of Phil Jagielka's career.
Well, Mark, if you're going to score a goal and you're going to leather it from 30 yards at the cop end, you're going to do it in the last minute like Phil Jagielka did.
I don't think there's any more perfect way to end it, to get a point. The absolute best moment of that was when they slowed it right down. You can see the Liverpool fans smiling behind the goal as it dropped to him, and then that smile slowly turning into fume, outright fume, when it was absolute exercise into the top corner.
I think that's why he got player of the season, Jagielka.
I think
he had a shocker, didn't he, for the first 6 months, let's be honest.
If he was coming under a lot of criticism at that time as well, Jagielka, wasn't he? for his performances. But
he really was.
He's had a penchant for that in his career, hasn't he? For hitting them. I remember a few for Sheffield United years back, but that was one hit.
Absolute world ever hit. On to October, Mark, we played our first Europa League game away in Krasnodar.
Yeah.
Eto, I remember he was given the responsibility of leading the line that night, and he was the one who scored against Krasnodar. You know, a good point, wasn't it, away in Europe? We'll take that all day.
Krasnodar pretty surprised me that night, how good they could be. You know, I know they beat us at Burisun when we had an understrength team, but Krasnodar were excellent that night, weren't they? You know, we didn't have a midfield that night, if memory serves me. Eto, was excellent. He led the line well, scored a good goal. I think right on the 6-yard box, wasn't it, that he stuck it in. But Krasnodar showed that, you know, no gimmies in the Europa League. They were doing full value.
I think we would have toughed that, though, wouldn't we? A victory over Wolfsburg and a point away at Krasnodar in our first two games. Onwards into October, anyway. In quick succession here, we then travelled to Old Trafford to play Man United. Radamel Falcao with his I don't think it was his only goal, but as we've said previously, Mark, if you're a striker and you need confidence, play against Everton because you'll fucking score.
We are comic relief when it comes to these players needing a first goal or to end a drought or anything like that. If Falcao scored, my abiding memory of that match is Tim Howard should have booted it into the crowd. We'd have got away with the points, but he played it down the line, I think, under Martinez's instructions. And United got the winner from that move on, didn't they?
And obviously Baines missed the penalty.
Yeah.
I was actually in Edinburgh for that mark, and you know, I'm not proud to say it, but I nearly got thrown out of a sports bar. I was hung over to death. I was watching that, and there was a mixture of, I don't know, Celtic, Rangers, United, Liverpool. There was all sorts of fans in there, and I was the only one. And my fury, because I remember David De Gea having an absolute world of a game as well, and keeping us at bay late on. I could not believe that we didn't get anything out of that game, but such is life as an Evertonian.
Well, back in the day with Dwight York and all that, when he used to destroy us, you'd have probably took a 2-1 defeat, but like you say, Everton deserved a bit more from that game.
A bit more to be happy about towards the end of October, Mark. Villa at home, we beat them 3-0.
Yeah.
Lille away 0-0. We'll come to that in a minute. I know you've got a lot of thoughts on that. And Burnley away 3-1. Starting with the Villa game, that was probably our first comprehensive win of the season, wasn't it? Jags scored again, Lukaku and Coleman.
Great results. I think Barkley made his first start of the season against Villa at home that day. It was just a routine win, wasn't it? It was, you know, it's like all this. We had it when we had the sort of, what's gone wrong with us, and then we just sort of brushed teams away. You know, it was just a comprehensive victory, wasn't it? Well, like you say, lots of attack play, lots of decent possession. And,
from your Everton side,
sort of a normal routine win.
What about Lille away then, Mark? No, you went over there, didn't you? A lot of this received a lot of media attention. This trip, but for the wrong reasons, really. The result probably, you know, Everton fans deserve more because I think 10,000 went over there. But
you were there,
Mark. So what were your thoughts on it? Without going on about it, like.
No, I'll try not to start going on with stories. Now it was an absolutely brilliant experience for me personally, because it's been a few years since obviously I've sort of been in Europe away. It was the trip sort of everyone jumped on, wasn't it, first? And I was made up when we got Lille away. Fantastic atmosphere. The trouble that was reported in the Echo, to be honest, I never seen any of it. I saw a few RoboCop impressions, the police looking like RoboCop, but the atmosphere was great. Everton took over the main square, apart from one horrifying crush in the sort of metro station on the way to the ground. I thought it was a brilliant trip. The ground was breathtaking, to be honest with you.
It was fantastic
stadium, something that we should be aspiring to as well. But it was, they had a dedicated cop end, you know, just added to the, it was a good game. It was a poor game though, to be honest. If Everton had been 50%, they'd have won that game.
There wasn't many chances to know to remember that, but it was the off-field sort of developments took the shine anyway in terms of the media attention. But again, it was another point in the, you know, we remained top of our group, didn't we?
If so we remember Lille at the time, we were sort of top of the French league as well, playing with a lot of confidence, you know, so it was a game where we never looked in trouble, but you know, it was a good point.
Let's be honest, Mark, League One, shite. Anyway, Burnley away. Samuel Eto'o, probably his finest, 60, 90 minutes, however, he didn't seem to play 90 minutes, did he?
Now, Marcus, wasn't it?
against Burnley. That was a Sunday as well. I remember being up the road in the post office watching that.
Half one kickoff from memory serves me right.
And he capped a fine performance with the third goal, didn't he? Well, he got two on the day, but his second was brilliant, wasn't it? The looping effort from about 25 yards.
At the away end as well, the away fans going pure limbs at that moment. It was a game again where, you know, Burnley had possession. They looked dangerous when they got back into it, but it was a game where it all seemed too easy again, you know. It all came too easy for us. It was a game where we showed our class. Eto'o was just, I think he was world class that day. Eto'o was just led the line superbly, didn't he? If you remember, a lot of people were calling for Eto'o to start ahead of Lukaku in the next match after that.
Well, I think it was just because of his smile, to be honest. It was infectious, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was great to see him smiling and playing like that in an empty shirt. Yeah.
True.
Wet at the moment.
On to November, Mark. We're moving through these quite quickly, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Probably because a lot of them are... we want to forget.
There's a lot of L's in there, like a lot of losses.
So be consistent, though. When you look down the fixtures here, obviously we've had to revert back to a fixture list here. We don't remember all this off the top of our heads.
No.
Obviously not. But looking through, there's a lot of W's, D's and L's. It's very inconsistent, the form. After the Burnley victory, we then drew with Swansea going into November. We beat Lille at home, then we went away to Sunderland and drew with them. It was almost like if we got a victory, we didn't sort of capitalise on it, and it would be a draw or a loss, and then it's so frustrating, and that obviously makes for an inconsistent season, doesn't it? Obviously, wins get good form and consistency.
We just never got going, did we? That was the main thing throughout. We just didn't get ahead of steam going in the league, you know, for whatever reason.
We didn't. Swansea at home, Mark, we probably can't even talk about that. It was 0-0. And that probably just sums it up.
The Walter Smith, that
yeah,
pure
Walter Smith-esque.
Yeah.
The following Thursday, we beat Lille 3-0. That was comfortable, wasn't it?
Again, great performance. Osman, I remember slating him when he was starting. I was having one of my Osman intolerant moments. And he scored an absolutely brilliant goal, didn't he, in the Park End that night. You know, Everton played great again. Lille were, you know, on the crest of a slump by then. They'd lost three or four games, hadn't they? But Everton made them look second rate that night. It's just another European performance to me, just like flicking a switch.
It was weird though, wasn't it? The confidence that we were building in Europe. Two home victories there, two away draws, remaining top of our group in the Europa. Compare that with our league form, you could see the difference, couldn't you, from when we kicked off on the 16th of August. The difference between the two sort of styles and confidence, like, I don't know, just the way we applied ourselves. It was almost like in the league, we were waiting for something bad to happen.
Yeah.
And in Europe, we were like, we're not waiting around here, we're going for it. And
it was like,
getting results.
It was like, the league was like a Thursday night out where you go for a game of pool with your mates, so you turn up in jeans. And then the Europa League was like, proper Saturday night, suited up, you know.
Old Spice on.
But
trying to get the birds,
you know,
and all,
you know,
that.
And you're feeling, you know, we just look reservoir dogs in Europe. And then
you and your fucking allergies again. No, we did, though, we did. We had a swagger. I mean, I think
a swagger,
Europe must have, like, especially our group, must have stood up and thought, hang on, these are a good side, these. We finished fifth in the Premier League the season before, so I think people would have respected us anyway. But the players we had, like Lukaku, obviously, you know, European defenders, they ate that sort of striker, don't they, as well?
And it showed with the amount of goals. I think he was joint top scorer with me in the Europa League, you know, just absolutely loved playing in it. I think what it was, teams looked at our league results and thought, they didn't really have much. And then we kicked them by turning up and playing so convincingly in Europe, didn't we? You know, we
playing them off the bat,
we enjoyed playing in that competition.
Definitely. Obviously, with following on from that, we've got November was probably our busiest month of games.
Yeah.
A lot of games to get through there, man. We went to Sunderland away, we hosted West Ham at home, then travelled to Germany to play Wolfsburg, then went to Tottenham before the month was over. Start with the Sunderland trip away from home. Not much to shout about, apart from a late Baines penalty, which we was late on, wasn't it? Was that in the last minute?
Yes, I think it was. Last 5 minutes, if memory serves me right.
Yeah, and we went behind and salvaged the point there.
Again, it was on a Sunday, wasn't it? Following the league, the Lille game on Thursday.
West Ham home game.
Remember that well.
With the offside goal.
McCarthy heads it inside for Osman. Flicks to the edge of the penalty area. Nick Smith on for Barkley. Barkley's done well. Got a shot in. Bricks for Lukaku. Must score! Yes! Everton are in front. And Bramall and Lukaku picking up the pieces on the end of the deflected ball into the penalty area from the eventual shot that first half in the 26th minute. Here's Zarate. That's too easy. Looking to inject that for West Ham. He's got the ball back. He's on the edge of the penalty area. And he fires towards goal, takes a deflection, loops over Tim Howard, and West Ham are level. The substitute has made an immediate impact. Mauro Zarate off the bench, scoring via a deflection for West Ham. But you have to say, to a certain extent, it has been coming. Everton lacks, West Ham level. Zarate's high ball in, should be the keeper's. Howard got something on it, and McCarthy has to clear from the dead ball line. And Everton trying to scramble it away. They do it.
Run up.
Eto's going forward. Goes on, even though Lukaku is fouled because the ball broke for Eto, for Oslo!
Yes!
A fancy play by referee Mark Plattenberg, and Leon Osman, on his 400th Everton appearance, may well have scored the winning goal for the Blues at Goodison Park against West Ham from a lightning Everton break. Lukaku was fouled by Collins but released the ball to Eto. Eto's ball into the box. Leon Osman marks a one.
Great. It was a break, wasn't it? I think Lukaku played it in. Osman slid in at the Bladder Street to get the winner. But if you're right, if you remember that day, I was absolutely fuming with Martinez that day because he'd started Tony Ibbett at left back. And I wanted Luke Garber to start.
That game,
I could not believe that he started Tony Ibbett at left back.
Yeah.
But it was absolutely gobsmacking that he'd done that. You know, I'm not the greatest Tony Ibbett fan. Haven't been since 2009, but to see him start.
Well, some would say he's not a right back, never mind a fucking left back.
Absolutely, completely paralysed us down the left hand side, and I could not for the life of me see what Roberto was trying to get out of that. It was one of them in an absolute catalogue of baffling managerial decisions for me. I thought, Baines was injured, if memory serves me right, for that game. Garber should have come in, ended up sitting on the bench watching over the hill right back.
Let's be honest, Garber, who was. More than adequate replacement for Leighton Baines on any afternoon.
Yeah, he doesn't tick all the boxes for Evertonians. He does for me. I think he's a fantastic player. He's been, you know, greatly underused this season, hasn't he? That was an example where he should have come right in, you know, but he didn't.
Well, that was the beginning of a good week for us, and we hadn't had many sort of runs of form. I know it sort of took till October until we won successive games, didn't it? In terms of the league, when we beat Villa and Burnley.
Yeah.
Looking down there, Mark, we beat West Ham and then travelled to Wolfsburg the following Thursday, and that was probably one of the most impressive performances and victories of our season away at Wolfsburg.
Perfect away performance for me. Wolfsburg had a lot of chances that night. I think De Bruyne was looking majestic that night, wasn't he? For them,
he's looking like Prince Harry.
Yeah, absolutely, looking like Prince Harry. So majestic in more than one sense of the word. But
I see what you've done there, Mark.
That was just pathetic. But two breakaway goals. Morales was a breakaway goal, wasn't it, at the end? In the greenest stadium I have ever seen. Eco-friendly.
To be fair, that night Tim Howard had a blinder as well, if I remember rightly. He kept everything out late on. But it was, I remember Roberto describing it as like the perfect away performance. But it was. We soaked up pressure. We took our chances and we were clinical. We kept a clean sheet.
Again,
the defence and the goalie were brilliant. On the attack, we just looked
just
so dangerous. The likes of Morales and Lukaku was, though, especially in Europe.
Absolutely, but if you look back at that run of form, after the Wolfsburg game, 5 wins out of 7, with Europa. So that is, if that's not a springboard, I don't know what is. And then absolute Everton that kicked in, and the balloon hadn't even got half up, and someone had stuck a pin in it.
Tottenham away. We'll move on to Tottenham away before the end of November's out there, Mark, before we come to Jesus, I don't know. Do you want to go and get some Valium when we talk about the December?
December might need some medication.
But obviously Tottenham away, Morales, absolute worldie of a strike, wasn't it? And that's what he's got in his locker. But also Everton have got in the locker the fact that they capitulate and Tottenham beat us now.
Tim Howard showing his penchant for palming the ball out into the 6-yard box instead of out for the ball. Yeah, we conceded incredibly poor goals that night. I think Eriksen got the winner, wasn't it, for Tottenham? But Howard just palmed it back. Howard was going through one of his nightmares.
Soldado scored as well.
Yeah,
just goes back to the likes of Chris Wood, the likes of
Wood
scored recently for Sunderland. What's his name?
Defoe scored. Danny Graham.
If you haven't scored forever.
Chris Wood ended up playing in the championship that season, so just shows you. We'll help anybody else.
So just like the little bit of form that we built there against Wolfsburg and West Ham, it all gets petered away with a disappointing loss to Spurs on the road. But anyway, what we'll do, Mark, we'll bring that first part of the podcast to an end.
Yep.
And what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. Mark's going to go and do some more Ken Wright bashing on Twitter. maybe a few burning effigies and things like that. Get a pint and we'll come back and we'll look at the next stage of the season. I think we all need to prepare to talk about December because it wasn't the best, was it?
It certainly wasn't, mate. It's absolute depression.
But that draws a conclusion to the part one of the end of season review, and we'll be back in a second for part two.
Cheers.
Hello and welcome to part two of the Everton Fan Focus end of season review podcast. Mark, are you still breathing?
I am, yes, still here.
Just about.
The beer's flowing lovely, so yeah,
yeah. You need a beer talking about this, let's be honest. Right, we've finished from August to November, now we move into the month of December 2014. Everton take on Hull on a Wednesday night, if I remember rightly. It was a midweek game and all that, and it was 1-0.
Yeah, another game where we sort of helped a non-entity striker register his first goal for the club and end his drought. I think Sonia Luko.
I thought you were talking about Nikita Jelovic there for a minute.
Jelovic is still loved, isn't he? You know, but yeah. No, Lukaku scored for us that night, didn't he? And it was, again, to be honest, a lot of people say Sam Allen's away was the Nadir. I think Hull at home was absolutely gut-wrenching.
Do you think that was a real turning point?
It was a real sign of where we were at in the league. You know, you knew it was going to be a struggle. Because there was still a lot of people, you know, I thought still, we can claw this back, you know, but I just want to, that when Hull, you know, it was just so depressing that game. I remember Hull. It didn't look like we had any fight at all, did we? You know,
well, Lukaku scored, but we took the lead in that on that game, didn't we? But I remember the atmosphere being
just ugly,
just horrible. With others on that night, it was a cold December night as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was a game that we were expected to win, and we didn't. We just didn't take. I don't know. It felt like a defeat. It totally felt like a defeat that night.
A chance to put things right after Tottenham, but obviously this is Everton we're talking about.
Yeah,
never works out like that.
No.
3 days later, we then travel to Man City. Obviously won the league the season before. Sort of going okay, shall we say. City this season probably disappointed by their own standards, but Mark, a controversial afternoon at the Etihad, wasn't it?
It was. We actually played well, I'd say. I thought we did a lot of good things about our play. We had Lukaku at it. Hart was fantastic in goal for City, denied Lukaku, didn't he? But also City got away with murder that day. I remember Mangala doing assist. I think it was a karate kick. The karate kick would have been piled on from Eto'o, I think it was. But City got away with a few fortunate decisions, not least the penalty.
Well, there was a couple, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I think you're right with Mangala, he was one. I'm sure it was one of the other midfielders, Fernando, was it, on Barry.
Yeah.
And obviously the penalty decision after 25 minutes, Mark, that was controversial in itself, wasn't it?
It was absolutely... It was an awful decision, wasn't it? I think Jagielka it was that went in on Milner. To be honest, it was such a Skyfall penalty decision, wasn't it? You know, it was Torre scored, didn't he, in front of the fans, but it was such a... It wasn't a penalty. I think if that would have been Hull against, you know, Newcastle, no one would have given a penalty. It was just because, I don't know, it was just a poor decision.
But I think that probably assesses our form at that time and what we were sort of coming into.
Yeah.
We were hit and miss, but then that Spurs game, getting beat there, drawn with Hull, then going to City, not having any luck at all,
no.
Getting beat 1-0. It was just all very, epitomised the Everton of this season, didn't it?
Sort of down on our luck, feeling sorry for ourselves. It was nothing, like you say, nothing was breaking for us, whereas last season everything was breaking for us, pretty much, wasn't it?
It was,
you
was,
know.
It. obviously, December's always a busy period.
Yeah.
The games came thick and fast. We played Krasnodar and we got beat 1-0 by them, which was our first defeat in Europe, man. But I think we all took heart from that, didn't we? Started with the kids, let's be honest. They did start with a second team against Krasnodar because we'd already got qualified and won the group. I thought they were credited themselves on the night, to be honest, some of the younger lads.
But they were great. I thought Kieran Dowell looked excellent that night, and also Ledson played, didn't he? A lot of big things expected of Ledson. It was great to see him playing in the middle of the park there. But for me, Garber was absolutely brilliant. I think it was Hinchcliffe-esque in his delivery. And
he looked ready already.
Yeah, all the dissenters saying, oh no, he's only played a couple of games, he's not good. If you'd have seen Garber that night, since this kid playing in the first team.
Exactly.
Excellent. You know, bears the pace a lot. Yeah, but Krasnodar, to be fair, turned up, did a professional job, didn't they? You know, they did look.
Was it their fans who were nuts?
Yeah, there was 14 fans. I'm sat in the main stand for that game, for the change, just as a seat. And they got the VIP treatment in the main stand. There was no one in the away end. And they were all sat on the chair, just in between, you know, the main stand at the Gladys Street side.
Who was it? Who's fans who came and they were doing that dance where they all spinning the scarves around? Was that Young Boys?
Young Boys, that was, yeah.
They were excellent down there. Well, to be fair, every European set of fans that we had were excellent in their own right. But
they drove from Russia, was the story, wasn't it? That they came all the way by a car. Yeah.
Did they come on a tank? That obviously finished our Europa League campaign, Mark, and it came at the end of a poor run in the league. But I think we all probably took a bit of pride and heart from that, the group stages, because we'd done well.
Yeah.
We'd done well, really. We'd won our, obviously, two of our three home games, and we got decent results away from home as well. So that was something, probably the one shining light, and I know you've described it as our comfort blanket, haven't you, many times when I've spoken to you. It was our something that we could cling on to.
Absolutely.
And that little bit of hope. But anyway, continuing into the midst of December, we then hosted QPR on a Monday night. Now, that game itself, Mark, I mean, you know, we tried different things that night. We saw Ross Barkley, the best of Ross Barkley, and it's just things like this that we never saw on a consistent basis throughout the season, and different combination in midfield. Bezic played alongside Ross that night.
Yeah.
We thought, here we go, these two look shit off.
And then, absolutely, totally agree. I thought Barkley played in a deeper role that night, didn't he? Played in the centre of the midfield. He dictated the play fantastically well that night. He looked the player that we all know Ross Barkley is as well. He scored a magnificent goal, if you remember, with his left foot into the top corner. Great hit. But Barkley looked comfortable. He looked confident in that position. And him and Bessage, you know, I know it's only QPR we're playing against, but him and Bessage did a fantastic job. The midfield looked the best it looked all season with them two in the middle there. But, you know, like you say, Martinez, for whatever reason, decided to totally break them up in the next game.
Into the hectic Christmas period, then we faced Southampton away, Mark, and as you said, he mixed it up. But to be honest, to me, you said the whole game was a turning point. The Southampton game will always be etched on my memory because for the wrong reasons. I saw a team, an Everton team there, which I've not seen. I've not felt so disheartened after an Everton performance in maybe 10 years, 12 years. I honestly can't remember feeling that bad. Even when we got beat 4-0 by Liverpool at Anfield, I didn't feel like that. That Southampton game, we were an absolute disgrace. And the behaviour of the manager, he didn't make substitutions when we were crying out for substitutions. We were crying out for a bit of hope. And him trying to take the positives out of a second half display just because we didn't concede. The game was over. Game was over after 20 minutes.
And you've got to think of all the fans who went down there.
That's what I didn't personally go.
Now,
just before Christmas, our fans going down there in the thousands, as they always do, to South Coast, the furthest away game, to put in a performance like that, absolute disgrace, Mark. And I think that is when I really my stomach started to go, and I thought, what's going on here? We need some sort of reaction. And we kept crying, oh, we've got them next, so we'll see a reaction. And to be honest, Mark, we all know that Southampton game's the start of a ball run of,
absolutely wretched run of form.
It was horrible. It ruined Christmas for a lot of people. And I know Everton, you might say, oh, Everton, it's just football or whatever, but when you support the club and love them as much as me, you, and a lot of people we do,
actually not, but I think it was horrible. It was horrible. It put me in mind of when Everton got beat to Walter Smith last game at Middlesbrough, and it was that type 3-0 of performance,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Atrocious, like you say, the people who spent an absolute fortune going down there, the fantastic away fans, you know, deserved a lot better than that. You don't mind getting beat if you're going to put a shift in. But just didn't give up.
Didn't put a shift in at all. We were lost. We looked lost. We looked devoid of confidence, devoid of leaders, devoid of ideas, a shadow of our former selves from last season.
Yeah.
It was horrible, man. I remember it. And I always revert back to that Southampton game. A Southampton side, don't forget as well.
Yeah,
yeah, they've done, had a great season, but they were on the back of 5 defeats on the run. I'm sure they were on, or they hadn't won in 5. If you look that up, I'm sure they were on a terrible run and they wiped the floor with us.
They looked like the Southampton were playing full of confidence. They had a great run, nothing, everything was going right. Now we just handed everything over.
So I was going to say Merry Christmas, Mark, but fuck that.
It's a rotten Christmas.
Stoke at home on Boxing Day. It goes from the bad to the.
Leighton Baines playing in the middle of the park that day, wasn't he? All I remember is that day, leaving the ground, it was the day after tomorrow, when it was that. It was absolutely the most
vile
weather I have ever seen in my life. Getting soaked, I think that was the night. I absolutely, in my own mind, thought, just why do I bother supporting this team? You know, again, it was another absolutely deflating, depressing result. And it was a Christmas to forget. It was like, we were somehow paying for having such a good time last season. You know, somebody's come back on us, but, you know, like you say, just, you know, there's obviously underlying issues that all this happened, but that Christmas was, it was ugly, wasn't it? It wasn't just poor, it was ugly.
It was disgusting. To be fair, Stoke have improved maybe under Mark Hughes. They're not maybe the side that he was. Give them a bit of credit, but still, to lose to Stoke, it's horrible. It's horrible. They're not a great side.
That day,
they're not a great side.
No.
And although they may have improved and they obviously finished higher up than us, credit to them.
Yeah.
They're not what Everton are, and they're not what Everton expect. And I remember that night, Mark, going back to me Mars as well at the weather. I remember just sitting there thinking to myself, I'm spending time, Christmas time, away from my family and family parties.
Absolutely.
And my own child, to go there and watch that. And obviously, to go to beat them and come home in the snow wouldn't have felt worse. But the way things were going with Everton this season, it was just like the fucking icing on the cake.
Yeah, it's like I opted for the depression, but, you know,
definitely.
Instead of staying at home, having a drink with my family and having a laugh, I went and watched that and got absolutely soaked on the way home. I can't believe it. You know,
so you get your hair wet?
I'm still shaking it off my hair now, 6 months later.
Well, at least we can look back and laugh, but it wasn't laughing matter at the time.
Absolutely not.
That was obviously the first of 3 games within 8 days over Christmas mark and the initial Christmas period. Yeah. We then went to Newcastle before 2014 finished. Again, we all know what happened there. Garuna Kone got off the mark.
He
got beat 3-2.
He's got a great goal as well, if you remember. It was right footed, I think shot into the roof of the corner. It was fantastic. Well, that was the day where Luke Garbutt really announced himself, didn't he? You know, announced himself and then disappeared. But he was Luke Garbutt played fantastic there, didn't he?
It's like anyone, though, isn't it? It seemed to be the theme. If you do well, you go missing.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like, you know, you do poorly, you get rewarded with the run of games in the team, man. It just seemed to give that impression all season long, didn't it?
Well, your whole Robles and Luke Bag Garbles are two classic examples.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
It was, again, Newcastle, how their season turned out. You know, look at them, and they beat us there. Kone, Morales scored late on, but the game was already gone, wasn't it? And I remember then thinking, Jesus Christ, I hope this new year brings new hope. But, well, I'd like to say Happy New Year to you, just like I'd like to say Happy Christmas, Mark. But, you know, on January the 1st, we went to Hull City and got beat 2-0, so...
Well, the desperate performance. Remember, Jelovic scored that night, didn't he, against us? We looked absolutely an absolute shadow of our former selves. So, we'd 4 straight defeats over Christmas leading up to that. Worst run of defeats in 9 years.
Unbelievable.
It was just, you know, to go up to that whole game and play the way we did again, like you say, new optimism. I think before that game we'd ended up with the second worst defensive record in the league, you know, and we were so faithful
for that first half of the season,
tightness last season, and yet, you know, and most of it was down to individual errors. Martinez's insistence on playing from the back with players who were uncomfortable doing it. You wouldn't change, would it, you know? So, like you say, you know, different results from doing the same thing is borderline insanity, and that's what Matt just displayed. It was outrageous stuff.
It hurt us, didn't it? And, yeah. And as the season wore on, we were like, look, we know you're stubborn, we know you've got a style of play, but try something new, just mix it up.
Yeah.
Just do something different, experiment, because the longer it was going on, it was like, where's this hope? Where are we going to drag ourselves out of it? Southampton, Stoke, Newcastle and Hull, let's be honest, with all due respect, four of... Say three of those four, you would probably say in the bottom third of the league.
Yeah, I agree.
And you know, ironically, Hull go down, Newcastle survive on the last day of the season, Stoke and Southampton are slightly better, but we're being beaten by them four, and then we're finding ourselves in a precarious position in the league, and it's like, where's the next victory coming from? And then you look at the fixtures, we've got an FA Cup game, so you can't even put it right in that.
But the next
league game's Man City, and you're like, where's the break going to come from? Where are we going to do it?
Yeah, you're right, the West Ham game. I couldn't be bothered with it, to be honest with you. It was like the league was so depressing. The FA Cup, I know it sounds hypocritical given that I had to go about the 20 years with the League Cup and all that, but I couldn't be arsed with the FA Cup, to be honest with you. I thought, no, hang on a minute. It's like going on holiday when you haven't paid your rent for 6 months or
all. The longer the League went on, though, Mark, I'm sure a lot of people felt about that. My arse was going, I was thinking, yeah, we're sound in Europe, yeah, but we couldn't enjoy it. We could not enjoy Europe for 1 minute this season.
Because of the worries in the league. And the league, you know, if we'd have won one, lost one throughout the season, there wouldn't have been any of this. But, you know, we had such horrific runs of form, didn't we? You know, massive, you know, runs of defeats, you know, particularly over Christmas. Just really, you couldn't enjoy any of it. Just like last season, most people were paralysed with fear that Liverpool would win the league, so you couldn't enjoy it.
Exactly. Just like when we finished fourth in 2004.
Absolutely.
And then we all know what happens after that. So it seems to always be the Everton way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But going into the new year, you had the West Ham game, have you just touched on, Mark? Lukaku with the last minute equaliser, wasn't it? It was like some moments like we were clinging on to anything. If we were going to go off the FA Cup, it was like, oh, it's just a continuation of all the bad things we've seen in the past, say, 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
But that Lukaku goal, you just felt like, oh, is that going to be a turning point?
Given, you know, if you remember the attendance that night was atrocious, it wasn't even 25,000 that night. Given that
there's probably more people in the booze here than there was in Goodison that night.
I totally agree, mate. It was blown out of all proportion, I thought, as a turning point, you know, this is it now. We were so desperate for anything. For a last minute Lukaku goal following a little bit of concerted pressure. It was, I remember a lot of people going, this is it now, this is the turning point, we'll be alright. But it was unconvincing, like the whole of the season was, wasn't it? You know, Lukaku scored, like you say. But it was a game again where you're thinking, just what's happened to us here? Yeah. You know, West Ham were the better team by far.
Clutching at straws, trying to get a replay against West Ham just to give us a bit of a boost, and that probably summed us up at that moment, though.
Couldn't agree, yeah.
And obviously we went on back to the league action then. Manchester City at home.
Yeah.
69 minutes played at Goodison, 0-0. Leighton Baines with this weapon, free kick. A two-man wall near post for City. Baines into the box, into the arms of Joe Hart, who spilled it. The referee's already blown for a free kick after Joe Hart spilled the ball.
Give it up, see?
The flag was raised, and the goal is ruled out. There's Jackie Up wasn't put the ball
but
in
the
net.
How can the linesman give this?
He's given Naismith offside.
Yeah.
We're just getting a rerun off it now, and because Naismith challenges for the ball, he's flagged Naismith offside. That is tight. Zabaleta gets City on the move as they break to the halfway line with Fernandinho. On for Navas. Navas with the ball into the box. Nasri cuts it back. Chance here for Silva. On his left foot, Silva's shot deflected and then headed home. It's gone in. It's Fernandinho, is it, who's got it for Manchester City. Everton appeal for offside. It looked like the shot that deflected up into the air was going wide before Fernandinho headed it home. Coleman couldn't prevent it going over the goal line. Everton are protesting. Bessage and Robles are coming to this touchline on the near side and querying with the assistant as to whether that goal should stand. But Manchester City have gone in front here at Goodison.
Baines to take this free kick.
Free kick, 10 yards outside the box. It's a decent free kick. Yay, Smith for Everton!
they are always up there, always give us a great challenge. We had a good record though against them in recent years.
We did.
Apart from last season when we beat us 3-2, well, we had to beat us 3-2.
Do you remember
Stephen Naismith equalised against City?
Fingers crossed.
But we saw a much better level of performance that day, wasn't it?
Much more like it. Absolutely, yeah. Much more like it. It was, you know, again, a performance that offered a lot more hope than anything that had gone before, that we could, you know, if we just turned up like that, then we'd be alright, you know. But it was, yeah, it was a reassuring performance, that one, wasn't it?
There was no time to breathe. It just shows you really how many games you cram in, you know, when you look down the fixtures.
Yeah,
especially at that say month or 6 weeks, December and January, how many games, because the FA Cup starts then. Unbelievable really, especially when you've got Europe to contend with.
Yeah.
But after that, we travelled to West Ham for the replay. Now that was a significant night, wasn't it? Lukaku got the early goal. Sorry, he got our goal in normal time, but Alas scored in extra time. If you remember when he came off the bench. He took it to extra time, didn't he?
He did. No. Yes, no, I think Lukaku scored the goal and Morales, do you remember, made it 2-1. Morales was absolutely, remember he came on, he was well past that night, money, he hopped the park.
Absolute game changer.
Evan played fantastic with great spirit that night, didn't they? McGeady went out, got himself sent off for a stupid challenge. But Evan played with a lot of heart that night, and again, that was a time where we thought, you know, the half fight, because remember, a lot of people were questioning whether they were playing for Martinez, but that showed that we were playing, you know, that they were playing for the manager. It was a good performance, but again, hard luck story yet again. You know, Joel missed his penalty in the West Ham one, 9-8 on penalty.
After, yeah, it was very unlucky, I think, and I agree, we did play with a bit of heart, especially it's all of a sudden gone really, really loud here. You can't hear the fucking words we're saying.
Apologies.
Anyway, back to the action. West Brom at home, Mark. Can I know, but you know, you look down the fixtures here and you're looking at 0-0s and 1-0s, but so much sort of controversy or topic happened from that game. It's unbelievable, isn't it? Monday the 19th of January,
yeah.
We played West Brom at home again, like earlier on in the season where there was opportunities to kick on.
Yeah.
We played West Brom, a real sort of...
A must win to
change our fortunes against the side. Let's be honest, West Brom, they're never going to be there. They're, you know, they're never going to do anything major in the league.
Keyless just took over there, hadn't they? You know, it was a game that we needed to win. And also, it's famous now for the Morales penalty, you know, gate. You know, taking the ball off Baines when really Baines should have stepped up. Baines stands up and takes that. We win the game 1-0, don't we? And we ease a lot of worries. But Alice's ego got the better of him. He wanted to take the penalty. I think it was he wanted to celebrate, pay tribute to a lad.
Is it the Belgian lad? Yeah.
I understand that, but there's a time and a place for that. He could have shown that in his performance rather than a goal. But it was, you know, just a scandalous sort of breaking of the ranks, wasn't it? You know,
I think it sort of it brought home some of maybe the off-field problems and behind-the-scenes problems, and obviously we'll go into them a bit more in detail, but it was horrible, wasn't it, Mark?
Yeah.
Coleman down the right-hand side, receiving from Besic, chance to dink it into the penalty area. Lukaku chested
it.
It is a penalty. Everton have got fortunate in the end. Lukaku's touch took the ball away from him, but it struck the arm of a West Brom player, and that saw referee Michael Oliver point to the penalty spot. It was Julian Lescott's arm, and he protests his innocence, but
he plays with his arm.
It does strike his arm, and Everton have a chance to score from the penalty spot. But it's going to be Kevin Morales to take this penalty for Everton. Liam Baines has been Everton's penalty taker for a long, long time. Okay, he missed one at Manchester United, but that is only Premier League penalty miss. Kevin Morales, at the end of this first half, misses, and Everton...
Everton pay the price for changing the penalty taker. He hits it wide of the right-hand post. It might have just brushed the post, but that is an opportunity wasted big time by Everton and Kevin Morales.
To justify our own thoughts, really, but you know, it was a game where, you know,
nil-nil. Would have set us up lovely, wouldn't it? You know, it's great.
Definitely would have done after the Palace victory, keeping a clean sheet there. Liverpool, let's be honest, you know, keeping a clean sheet there, another point. Going to Chelsea and putting in a performance and maybe nicking it. But at the other end, then we go and shoot ourselves in the foot. It's very evident, wasn't it? Very evident.
I agree.
And that all happens in the space of a week. So it shows you the emotions that we go through as football fans and as Evertonians, really.
Absolutely.
Less than, I think it was about a week later, we then travelled to Switzerland to play Young Boys.
Yeah.
Mark, probably. But absolute unreal performance, wasn't it? Luke Carpenter was unplayable, the perfect tactic. Seamus Coleman got on the score sheet that night. All after going behind, because was it Harrow, was it?
Gilliam Harrow.
Harrow looked like an absolute world beater on the night.
He looked the part, didn't he, that night? I remember seeing, you know, doing a player like him up front. But yeah, he looked great, didn't he? The Swiss are nuts, aren't they? The fans, it was a great atmosphere that night. But
let's be honest, as a country, they haven't got much else to shout about, have they?
Not much at all. No, they dodge wars and everything, don't they? So. Everton played fantastic that night, didn't they? There was a real arrogance to our play, real ruthlessness. And, you know, Lukaku just looked at $1 again. Hat-trick, could have had about five that night, if memory serves.
They could have done that. I remember him saying after the mark, he was disappointed just to get the three.
Yeah.
It was absolute.
I think every time we attacked, we looked like scoring that night. It was, you know, Everton were fantastic. Not much to say for Young Boys' defence. It were more focused on attacking us rather than sort of keeping us out. But, you know,
definitely. But it was a continuation of our. Obviously, we're out of the group now, and this was the qualifiers, and this was the actual bread. You know, the business end of the Europa League, and to go there in such emphatic style was brilliant.
But it enhanced that feeling that something was down for us in the Europa.
But then typically 3 days later we play Leicester and we do 2-2, and you know,
Leicester.
Naismith scores and we get an own goal, but Jesus Christ, it was painful again, wasn't it? Goodison Park.
Tim Allen's absolute worst moment of the season, if you ask me. I mean, he had 100, but I think that one was the worst. What was he doing for, I think Cambiasso's goal for Leicester. Tim Allen's decision making that day was absolutely atrocious. And just, again, you know, teams haven't worked hard, have they, to score? It hurt us this season, and Leicester did the same, you know. Just, yeah. Ridiculous result, ridiculous performance. Again, we're sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel, saying that we got it. Upson scored in the dying embers, didn't he? He deflected it in, so we got a point out of it. But, you know, like you say, again, another desperate result.
Desperate hanging on against the likes of Leicester as well.
Yeah.
During that point, you know, they looked dead and buried. All fair play to them. You know, I remember speaking to the Leicester fan ahead of that on the actual podcast.
Yeah.
And they were dead and buried, and he was like, you know, we're a good side, but we just keep getting beat. But then they go to Goodison and get a morale boost and draw.
I think that sort of was the catalyst for
that. Probably, yeah. Probably, if you're going to get a catalyst, you're going to get it against Devon. But anyway, a few days later, we then hosted Young Boys. Excuse me, in the home, like Mark, and it's 3-1. It's his routine, wasn't it? Luke Harkham again, that man, with 2 goals and Morales on the night.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To make it interesting for 5-10 minutes, but then, you know, it was clear as day they couldn't defend, and we had spent far too much going forwards. And we, you know, again, we looked, you know, we played better in Switzerland for sure, but you know, we looked efficient that night. I think it was probably more famous for the Everton fans' sort of reaction to Liverpool going out that night.
Going out to the Europa, yeah. And maybe the young boys' fans' performance in the stands, they were brilliant, wasn't
it? Like, well, I had to check the score quite a few times to make sure it wasn't them that were winning. You know, such was their, you know, support, fantastic support. If only we'd had a fraction of that in Goodison this season, you know.
The graveyard, as it's been, become familiar terms, yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway, that's February out the way, Mark. We move on to March.
March.
Those next two games set each other down the spine. We went to Arsenal on the Sunday and then Stoke on the Wednesday. Yeah. Mark, for me, right personally, I didn't do it at any point this season, but I remember speaking to you after that Stoke game and saying, you said Roberto out, you wanted the manager gone.
Yeah.
Now, that's fair enough, that's your opinion. Yeah. You were not the only one. There was thousands of Evertonians asking, even before then, to be honest. But that Stoke game was shambolic. To me, echoes of the Southampton game.
Echoes of the Southampton game. Echoes of, you know, like I said before, the Middlesbrough-Walter-Smith game. We always have these games, don't we, to signal the end for someone. And you know, that Stoke game was all them games and more. A little more atrocious that night, where they gave them what was at stake. Given the, you know, we needed to
battle. I remember walking up Old All Sit on that Thursday morning, Mark, and I felt lifeless, absolutely lifeless.
And to be honest, the panic set
about
in.
I couldn't even bring myself to comment on Twitter, do anything. I was just like, I felt weird. I went to work on my own, listened to music, and I remember sitting there thinking, what's going on? Are we going to pick ourselves up from this? How long is it going to go on? Are we going to go down? What would happen to the club if we went down? These thoughts were running through my head on the way to work, and I couldn't even speak to anyone when I got into work. I thought, what's going on? I saw our fans' reaction on Twitter the night before, Mark, and I went to bed. I felt upset. I'm not going to lie. I felt upset by that.
There was a sense of panic set in after that result. It did seem that, you know, I know it's, you know, it looks ridiculous now given how many points we finished above the relegation zone, but at that moment relegation seemed on, didn't it? It seemed on for all the world that we could easily get something.
But Mark, it kept going on, didn't it? It was like, how many of these defeats and lifeless defeats is it going to take for the manager to try and turn things round and the players get a kick up the arse?
Completely agree.
I can only say, thankfully, we did after that, but only slightly to edge ourselves away.
Yeah.
But after that,
I'll be honest, I wanted my mess out, and not a lot has changed since for me to sort of completely go and do a U-turn on that thought. But you know, thankfully we did enough, didn't we? And it was coming up in the next month, basically, that we changed it around, didn't we?
True. Obviously, we have progress in the Europa League after that, but again, you couldn't really be like, yeah, we're going to play Dynamo Kiev. I'm excited about that, because we're just being beat by Stoke and Arsenal. We, you know, the league position was becoming ever more so worrying. But we did play Kiev.
Yeah.
We went a goal down. If you remember that 20-25 minute spell, Mark, they wiped the floor with us, didn't they?
They did. Absolutely fantastic.
Lee Smith has got us back on level terms.
They did. Everton played well. Kiev looked well, just didn't they, for the first 20 minutes. Like most teams, you know, tend to have done a good thing this season. But Everton, again, showed a lot of fight that night. Not great quality, if you remember. But Everton really dug in. And again, given what went after it, maybe that was a little catalyst for us to sort of come away from the relegation zone. Because Everton, you know, Kiev, although it didn't show in the second leg so much, you know, they were a decent team to come back from a losing position to win that game. Lukaku didn't score a penalty at the end. It was good for the character of the team, and it certainly helped in the games coming up.
Have you just said character?
I did. I remember the first time I've said that.
I was going to say, we've gone through this without saying character.
I'm so sorry.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, and also
so many
superlatives and unique of averages.
You are a unique supporter. After that, Mark, 3 days later, with these Europa games, the fixtures are coming thick and fast. And they did do. Newcastle at home, we beat them 3-0. To me, it took 5 months to have another result like that. 3-0 with a check.
He goes long towards Lukaku. Lukaku with Colaccini behind him. Plays in McCarthy. Chance to shoot. Oh! Yes! McCarthy with a rare goal for him. But a very, very important one for Everton.
Goodison Park. McCarthy drilling home from the edge of the box.
Norman can't find Kone, although it's given away by Newcastle to Aaron Lennon. Lennon now down the right hand side, puts one into the penalty area, cleared by Newcastle again. And,
said Aaron Lennon's been brought down there by Johan Gudbrand, and that's a penalty to Everton.
Everton have had this problem of a penalty taken before this season. I've seen Romelu Lukaku pick the ball up.
Come on, Rom.
And he's going to take this spot kick at the Gladys Street end. Well, he converted one here on Thursday, and he
Get it!
He sends the goalkeeper the wrong way and rolls it into the opposite corner, and Everton have a two-goal lead. Massive Premier League points. Romelu Lukaku strokes home from the spot, and Everton lead by 2-0, and hopefully now that is enough.
And now Osman forward to Lukaku, played off for Kone. Flag stays down. Kone's got Lennon to his right. Kone still going, he's overrun it. Does break though for Lennon.
That's a terrible challenge.
Colaccini, and that could be a red card. It is.
To the ground, a two-footed challenge as well. Everton players wagging fingers at Fabrizio Colaccini, saying that's a bit naughty, and Newcastle will play the rest of the game with just 10 men. A straight red for the Newcastle skipper.
2-0 here, Everton lead. We're inside the final minute of stoppage time, and Christian Atsu's on the brink forward. Ross Barkley's motoring forward to join him. He's played it in. This should be three. Barkley's round the keeper.
Yeah!
Barkley scores a wonderful goal at the Gladys Street end to put the seal on Everton's first home league victory of 2015, and it puts the seal on it in some style with Ross Barkley's second goal of this season, and Everton have now recorded victory for the seventh time in the Premier League this season.
I think back to the Villa game when we beat them 3-0 in September, October time, 5 months, probably 6 months.
Jack Yelka, that game played an outrageous thing, like 50-yard pass on the ground, and completely opened up Newcastle, didn't it?
McCarthy chested down.
Fed it into, McCarthy, he run on a belly kick. Ross Barkley's got a lovely goal that day, if I remember.
Yeah, the break, the Gladys Street end,
round the keeper and stuff.
Just what he needed, just what we needed,
Completely agree.
Because, you know, you get hyped up by that. You beat Kiev, you beat Newcastle, and then you go away to Kiev, Mark. I know it's very sore subject with yourself, your brother. A lot of Evertonians, I remember watching it that night thinking, this sums up being an Evertonian, but we got beat 5-2 away Kiev. I don't really want to talk about it much, Mark, as it does me head in, because I know how good you were in Europe. And I know the performance we've put in, and I know the difference between the European and the domestic displays from Everton. But to go there in Kiev and capitulate like we did, it was almost like the home side. You know, whatever they did, it ended up in the back of the net.
Well, they had to, they worked out in about 5 minutes that all it took was a few lofty balls into the box, and we were struggling. Certainly with Alcaraz, having an absolute nightmare.
It didn't help with it. Playing like a Sunday league defender, let's be honest.
That defeat, Mark, still, you know, it represented our last opportunity to win a trophy this season. I know it wasn't really on it, it was more of a pipe dream, to be honest. But it was getting more and more real. And when it ended in such an abrupt fashion, basically, that defeat, as you're getting older, these club defeats tend to cut deeper. And that one, to be honest, it sounds pathetic. I'm still fuming over it now.
It's almost like, I know stuff was said about maybe John Stones being unwell or not, but I don't know. It's the manner. Well, the manner in which you go down.
We couldn't wait to put Tim Howard back in with Robles, and he said it was his number one thing. If only he would have applied the same logic to Stones being fit and played him instead of Alcaraz. That's the thing. We could have lost that game 3-2 and still would have gone through.
Exactly.
You're out of the style. So there's no one.
I think we 2-level and then did Barkley at the post, it's just like,
it's just the small margins, though, isn't it?
Don't get me wrong, hit the fourth or fifth, whatever it was, the right back or left back, hits it, and it's flown in the back of the net, you know what I mean? It's one of them nights where everything it turns to goal, but it was the manner in which we went down in the first half.
half, and that just so disappointing. Lukaku scored, and we thought, right, settle down, regroup, do this. No, we just absolutely switched off. We just went on it,
I like to think that we've learned from our European performances this season, Mark. We were, I'd say for 90% of it, we were great. We, you know, we had a swagger about our play, a confidence assurance. European side feared us, especially with Lukaku leading the line. I thought we'd done well, really well, and we deserve praise for that, and hopefully we'll learn from it and kick on from it. But to go out in that fashion was just such a, it was almost like the piss take, wasn't it? The icing on the cake for the season.
It was just gut-wrenching, no other way for it, mate. Just absolutely gut-wrenching to see us get beat by Leicester. But like you say, we can't dwell on it, because we'll be on the medication yet again.
That was in front of nearly 70,000 fans as well, that.
Incredible.
And then the week later, we play in front of 17,000 fans at QPR and at Loftus Road. We can still hear to see you, by the way.
I feel like I'm in the middle of Manchester Street.
I think we've heard more noise out of Goodison than this boozer.
Oh, this boozer than Goodison.
Sorry, yeah. Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
But the week after, we travelled to Loftus Road, Mark, and I think that's probably where Aaron Lennon, which we'll come back to later, his performance as a whole, but it's probably where he sort of stamped his mark by getting the winner.
Yeah.
And obviously QPR were fighting for their lives, and they're probably the better side on the day. I remember watching that game, another Sunday game.
Yeah. Another striker bang out of form, he scored against us, Marcus.
2-2, second half. Same as Coleman, gave us a great opener in the first half. Vargas brought the home side back into it, but Aaron Lennon nicked the winner. And O'Coney had a hand in both goals, to be fair to that. Leon Osman as well.
And if you remember, Coney had a poor game that day, didn't he, as well? You know, but he, like you say,
he had
a crucial difference, yeah. He was played a key role in two goals. Leonard's goal was fantastic follow-up play, wasn't it? You know, the ball came out. The keeper parried it, and Leonard followed it up. The team scored. You know, I just think he had a wonderful impact, didn't he, for Evan when he came on, when he signed for us.
Definitely, and that was obviously the start of our upturning form, Mark. Yes. Let's be honest. After all the sort of poor performances and erratic form that we'd seen before us in the previous, say, 7 or 8 months, to come there to the end of March and get a win and run together. We beat QPR, we then beat Southampton at home, and we drew with Swansea, beat Burnley, and beat Man United. And that was what?
Winning form, wasn't it, out of nowhere?
Exactly, and you think to yourself, if you can keep that through to the end, you know, you might have a top 8 finish on your, and let's say top 8, well, a top 8 finish would be an incredible achievement.
Yeah,
considering the fact that we've been down in the, you know, 13th, 14th position at some times.
Yeah.
And really couldn't buy a win throughout the season.
It seemed damn his limitation, though, given what had gone before. And, you know, I mean, you know, it was ridiculous the way we blew away the threat of relegation with a title sort of run of form, if you like, you know, something like 4 wins out of 5, wasn't it? Because we reeled together just when we needed it. Made me feel ridiculous about thinking relegation was on. But you know, it was typical Everton, really. They had you panicking, and then they had you relaxed, don't they, straight after it. Mad. With Everton plate. You know, the Man United game was fantastic, wasn't it? You know, it showed you what we were capable of as a team.
That was a continuation of our form, wasn't it? I mean, again, we went to Swansea. Lennon got the goal, the opener, and they came back into it with a bit of a contentious penalty decision. But we were still, it was an upturn in form for us. We beat QPR, we beat Southampton. We'd gone to Swansea and got a point. Burnley at home, when Alas scored, and we all know the Barkley penalty debacle again, which we won't dwell on, but we'll come back to later on. But Jesus Christ, it was like, we've got a bit of form going here, let's follow it through. The United game was like, why haven't we played like this all season? They almost had echoes of that Arsenal game, second game of the season, Mark, when we were 2-0 up at half time, we were all guns blazing, then we capitulated. But in the Man United game, United saw a lot of possession. We succumbed to their possession. Roberto obviously changed his approach. But why hasn't he done that? Why hasn't he been more adaptive and a bit more flexible throughout the season, rather than being so rigid and stubborn in his approach? That's what makes fans like you lose your head.
I completely agree, and there's not much here to lose now. But also, that United game showed that we still had it as a team, didn't we? You know, a lot of people made too much of the United possession. It was a deliberate ploy by Martinez to let United have possession. But it showed what we were capable of, and where the hell had that been all all season long, we hadn't seen it. And also, a great moment in that game was John Stones. I've never seen a player so happy to score a goal. You know, I know it sounds stupid, but the look on his face when he buried that header in the top corner, I think, you know, fantastic.
Great reward for what John's been
that way. Like, yeah.
Wonderful performance,
played short by Manchester United. An opportunity for Mata now to put the ball into the penalty area. He does so, and it's headed away comfortably enough by Seamus Coleman. Well, by Everton, and they're on the break here down the right. Coleman, ball back in towards McCarthy. A break for McCarthy. McCarthy still has it. Today with appearance number 50 in the blue jersey. Everton have lost the ball, and Fellaini spurned the opportunity after Everton overplayed just outside their own penalty area. Everton are complaining that they should have had a free kick, but Fellaini was allowed to advance to the edge of the box. That's a clear chance which he's lifted over the crossbar.
Well, to be fair, John Stones just played a ball to Gareth Barry, and it's really Gareth Barry can't do an awful lot. It's fist out.
On the ball into the penalty area from these corners has Leighton Baines. Let's see what he does on this occasion. Lennon again is staying short, but he's just pulled Juan Mata with it once more. Baines goes near post again.
John Stones, yes!
The youngster on his 50th appearance for the club has headed home his first goal for the club. What a moment for John Stones! Everton 2, United 0, and it's a memorable moment indeed for the young England international. Baines with the corner and Stones with a wonderful header into the top corner of the net. United couldn't keep it out. 2-0. Corner which Ashley Young is going to take on the right-hand side for Manchester United. Right-footed delivery into the penalty, headed down by Smalley. Greg's here for Rooney. That's a great save from Tim Howard, who was quickly at the feet of the former Everton player. Everton can move it forward towards Lukaku via Morales. Now Barkley is offside here, Lukaku.
No, he's not.
He's let the ball run for Morales. It's a great lead, and Morales can...
No!
Your high point of the season, Mark. To be honest, that Man United victory there on that Sunday, you know exactly what. You know what I mean? It's, you think about it, and you think, well, you know, what are you going to celebrate, Jagiel, because equalising against Liverpool or beating Wolfsburg or going away when in the end it came to nothing? But what can you say is the high point of the season tonight? Beating United probably is.
I would say
Yeah, because of how poor it's been before. I'm not saying I'm happy with just beating United 3-0 because, you know, a couple of weeks before we got slammed over in Kiev 5-2 and we were being beat by Stoke and Arsenal comfortably away from home. So
I agree, and what was more pleasing about that was United were on a particularly mean run of form at that time, weren't they? And not just winning results, but winning, they were looking better as well. They were looking more of a complete team, you know, just showed what we were capable of. Where the hell had that been all season? So frustrating.
Definitely, and then, but then the thing is, we sound like a broken record saying it. You move on to another month, and it's another different Everton that you see. And
the minute we get enthused, the minute we have to lower our tone.
Exactly. So we go to Villa, and we get beat 3-2, and it ends up being that man Tom Cleverley.
It was a fantastic goal. It was, you know, he broke, didn't he? And went 1-on-1 with Howard and smashed it into the top corner. That was a game that I felt like we'd got beat 5-0 when I walked out of that ground. I think to lose to someone like Tim Shearer with such an obvious, arrogant get, to be honest, Villa played well that day, but, well, they didn't play well, they didn't have to really. It was just a case of Everton were absent. I think Everton had the cheek to take their foot off the gas that day. They thought, okay, we've done enough, we're safe. Forget like the season's hopes and expectations before that. Evans has decided to take the foot off the gas. Villa were desperate, if you remember, at that time.
I think you had that Villa fighting for the lives,
and
yeah.
Self and Westwood were cleverly, really outmaneuvered the other midfield that day.
That's
fantastic. But, you know, 3-2, it might as well have been 5-0 for the way Evans played. It was just atrocious that day. I was laid into James McCarthy, who got a poor day that day. And maybe went over the board criticising him, and everyone jumped on me like I'd. And slacked off, and you know, like I'd said something wrong, or you know, said something outrageous. But obviously, James McCarthy's a favourite, I love him. But today, that day, he had an extremely poor game. And along with everybody else, to be honest, it was only Aaron Lennon that stood out again that day.
But it comes after sort of four or five, you know, boosting games, doesn't it?
Yeah, I remember sitting there saying, only Everton could be United 3-0, and then go to the very next game, I'm not completely devoid of
it. But then he leaves with Leon Osman and Ross Barkley on the bench for that, though, Mark, I remember that.
Chops
and I thought they were key in the United victory, whether or not he play an hour or 90 minutes, and then, you know, he brings the both of them on.
Yeah.
At Villa Park, but the game's already won. Villa have got the wind in the sails here, with, you know, doing toss-overs on the touchline,
he's thinking he's Miami Vice, but
exactly. And that's it, you know, Jagielka scores a last minute second goal, but the game was won, you know, before he...
It's amazing to give that, it's more like a foul on Kevin for all the world, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Jagielka just handed it in,
But before we've got time to focus on that, the season's coming to an end, we play another relegation candle at Sunderland at home, and 12:45 game, Mark. I don't think I've ever experienced a quieter game at Goodison than I have Everton v Sunderland. Now,
thank God,
we had that Everton night, didn't we?
We did. Like,
I'm not going, I can't make it, you know. I've got I've had a heavy night. In the end, I end up going because no fucking wanted me ticket, to be honest. But as it worked out, I ended up going, and I was like, what am I doing here? I went in late.
Yeah,
a portion of chips sunk over to death, and I was like, as soon as I took my seat, you could just tell it wasn't going to be Everton's day.
Sunderland just, again, we had a lot of possession that day, didn't attack with any intent, didn't really play with any kind of menace, you know, that we'd shown in the last home game against United. Just completely, a team that had totally took its foot off the gas on it, you know, and like, we, you know, we had possession as you'd expect. Sunderland, I think they scored two goals, and I had about 95 deflections contributing to them goals.
Danny Graham, the world beater.
We can add him to Aluko, we talked about all of them, haven't we? Soldado, Falcao, Danny Graham, Evan, are the go-to place for a bang out of form striker. Ridiculous defeat. I think it could have been 3-0 had Stones not stopped at Poe at the end. But again, I remember a bloke coming over me on County Road that day, was walking across, crossing on a green mat. He said, screaming at me to the car window, and I said, would you want me to cross on when he's on red? Would that make you feel better? And the guy was there from the flyers around me. I was in no mood to exchange pleasantries with him. So, I think that was the highlight of that day.
That's probably just County Road on a nice day. After that, we then went to, to be honest, I just wanted to say a quick thing about Dick Advocaat and Sunderland. I think he deserves credit for coming to Goodison Park and playing three up front. I thought Lee Catamol had a good game that day as well.
You've got to give credit to his approach, haven't you? He just totally went for it.
To be fair to the fella, though, Mark, he's kept them in the league with the results. He's gone away, he spoke to his mates wherever they live.
Yeah.
He's been offered the deal for another year, and he said we can spend $50 million this summer, so I'll take that job myself, you know. A year away from your bed, $50 million to spend, what wouldn't you want to do?
I know. Do you think Martinez fancies going away, leaving his missus for a bit so he can get $50 million to spend?
Come back with an head like you.
Absolutely. It really went on notice, didn't it? The job I've done at Sunderland, fantastic job.
Yeah, fair play to them, you know. I just remember when they were shooting towards the Gladys seat end in the first half. I was thinking they had Conor Wickham, Danny Graham, Jermaine Defoe, to be fair to the fact, you know what I mean? He's come in, he can't say he's going to try and nick a one earlier by playing one up top and five in midfield. He went for it.
He went for it.
You know, they're always going to be erratic Sunderland, but he kept him in the league.
Yeah.
Anyway, week after that, we travel to West Ham.
Yeah.
Probably our best away ground, isn't it, Mark?
I think if you ask Everton fans, it's their favourite away ground. It's fantastic. We just love it, don't we? I think we've got an outrageous record at West Ham. I think we've won 8 out of 9 away games there. They must absolutely hate us coming. It always seems to be 2-1 as well, doesn't it? Or 3-1, you know.
Both teams to score, yeah.
Yeah.
Lukaku scored absolute limbs in the away end that day, do you remember?
Well, let's not, you know, we went a goal behind with Stuart Arnold, that was bound to happen, wasn't it? Leon Osmond's goal, Mark, that was brilliant, wasn't it?
Well, Allardyce was absolutely swooning over that goal at the end. I mean, it was right there. It was a fantastic goal, wasn't it?
Brilliant team.
Chest on it, you know, not many players can score that goal. It took on his chest and swiveled, didn't he? And it was in the back of the net.
But because it's Leon Osmond and he's little, and he just... The goal sort of, let's be honest, it didn't sort of mean anything, did it? I mean, it's an equaliser. Every goal means something, but...
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's Osmond, it's like, it's underrated, isn't it? The goal's underrated. When you watch that technique, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
First goal type finish, wasn't it? Yeah, fantastic goal.
I agree with Allardyce, though. If that's anyone else, though, Mark, the top of it. No. But in terms of the context, with Everton finishing 11th, finding out with 10th and 11th place, and equalising against West Ham, it doesn't mean much, does it?
But any actor scores that, and it's talk, isn't it? You know, I don't talk about it.
Well, we all know Leon Osmond's better.
Absolutely.
Don't pour me drink over me, Mark. Lukaku scored the last minute there, and obviously that was a nice celebratory moment for our fans. We all love a good toss over in the stands, let's be honest.
McGeady coming on and doing a Van der Weyden, sticking a great ball in for Lukaku, wasn't
I'd still let him go to Celtic on a free, to be honest, even after that.
I would, I'd even pay Celtic a few quid to take him, to be honest.
Do you want to drive him? Should we hire a minibus or something?
I think we could do, we could have a night out in Glasgow as well while we're up there, yeah. Definitely, but no, it was just one of them random moments, wasn't it, where a player who hasn't played all season comes on and does a moment of magic, puts a great ball in, to be fair, which is his job.
Definitely.
And Lukaku got his job and stuck it in the back of the net.
So after that, Mark, we had one game left, and then we obviously played Tottenham at home, and we went up. We finished the season with a whimper, didn't we? An absolute whimper.
If ever there was a more apt end to the season that summed up the whole season, it was Tottenham at home, wasn't it?
It would be Harry Kane scoring at Goodison Park at half the ground, even before the lap of honour or lap of dishonour.
I think there was about 11 people left when the players went round. I think that's being generous.
They were all just waiting for your autograph, Mark. Your Twitter fan club. No.
It was disappointing, wasn't it? You know, left everybody flat, like the whole season had, really, to be honest. It was an act then. Yeah, Harry Kane, I think, deflected it. Well, a flick header, as memory serves me right. But I tried to wipe most of it out with alcohol, to be honest. It's not worked, but most of it's gone, thankfully.
There's only so much you can drink, hasn't Evertonian?
I'm now starting to remember the marriage to my ex-wife more clearly, so maybe I need to start thinking about that season more.
So there you go, that's our season review. I know we've waffled on, but we've tried to... initially, I said we wouldn't talk about every game individually, but we thought we would.
Yeah.
Done just over an hour there, so what we'll do is we'll have another break, and then we'll come back and then we'll discuss the key moments from the season and things that have gone on off the pitch as well. And let's see if we remember everything, Mark. It's an awful lot to discuss still, so, okay, we'll be back in a second. Just been for the drink. Just been to make a few phone calls to see if Elstone's been sacked.
Yeah, all I got from it was that I'm on the sofa tonight, basically, when I get it.
Well,
yeah,
that's it. From Elstone, all you bit. What we're going to do now is we're going to go back through a few points from this season and give our opinions on it. So, Mark, firstly, I want to ask you, Roberto's stubbornness with his tactics, his formations, even in the midst of our loss of form.
It's been extreme at times, hasn't it, really? Borderline insanity, to be honest, with Martinez. It's just complete lack of flexibility. I think it's cost us an awful lot this season. You know, he's obviously a guy who doesn't like to be proven wrong. I think that's shown all season long with his decision-making. Some of his sort of the players he's put in, you know, the persistence with Tim Howard, the Barry, Gareth Barry, that type of player, you know. He hasn't really given you the chance this season, has he? That's one thing that stood out for me, is that he's sort of gone cautious in his approach. He thinks, you know, that reckless abandon that we sort of played with last season has gone. It's been replaced, you know, by sort of worry and caution, hasn't it? You know, we just looked a complete shadow. And I don't know what's it. I think it stems from pre-season, personally. The whole mess starts from when he went on a jolly up to Brazil. Without so much the pre-season. I know I've said that before, but I honestly think it stems
from then. I don't know whether we had too good a season. Sounds stupid, doesn't it? But, you know, did we have too good a season last season that you think we didn't need that much? Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe he got a bit ahead of himself.
I think so, maybe. But, you know, we certainly entered the season with not enough strength and depth. It wasn't the Lukaku sign. It wasn't the be-all for me. We needed a lot more. But I just think his stubbornness, lack of, you know, the Hibbert left-back situation, stuff, it's things like that that have drove fans mad all season long, and it, you know.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of our fans would echo your thoughts, Mark. For me personally, I think I see a lot of what you've just said there in terms of his stubbornness with his tactics, his sticking with his favourites. But for me, he doesn't help himself with the comments he makes.
No.
I see every week in, week out, fans are like, what games you've been watching there? It's absolutely ridiculous, some of it.
I know.
And yeah, I'm all for, you know, the first season, phenomenal list and amazing that, and character and unique. And we can all use these sort of terms in our jobs and in our lives, but it doesn't wash with Evertonians, and, you know, we're not soft, we're all adults here, we're all human beings, we can see what's happening before us, and to me at times this season it looked like it was falling away, it was falling apart, there was disharmony off the field, on the field, and it was horrible, and I just think he needs to be a bit more, maybe rigid in his approach, and a bit more forthright, and a bit more honest in the future, and be like,
completely agree.
I'm not expecting someone to come out and absolutely slate his players, but don't give us fans bullshit.
No.
Don't feed us bullshit.
No.
Because we used to get enough from the club anyway.
Yeah.
Off the field.
Absolutely.
Let's be honest here. We're watching it. We're all, even if you're not paying, you know, you take money to go and watch them every week, you can still see what's going on with the team.
Don't tell us
the sunshine
and when it's pissing down.
Exactly.
It's been the
theme
all season long.
And it creates a toxic atmosphere, like you said earlier about one of the games, Mark. You described it as toxic. And it is. I go there and you speak to me, and why isn't he doing this? Why isn't he doing that? It's just questions. There's no answers. And it's like, I'm the manager, I'm going to do this. But at times this season, it just needed a bit of a flick of a switch.
Yeah.
A bit of a change.
That's up front.
I'm not trying to say drastic changes, but try something different and sort of approach it in a different way to see whether something works out.
Yeah.
Experiment rather than just sticking to what maybe you may have done in the year before or when you were at Wigan or what you've been brought up to do. You know, you have to adapt to the surroundings. It's a never-changing world.
Adapt to different situations, don't they?
And all good players, you know, it's an ever-changing world, and we have to adapt and we have to evolve as a club. And I just think this season we went a bit stale. We went a bit dry.
Clubs
worked us out, Mark. Our players worked us out. Our players ran out of ideas. There was disharmony behind the scenes. And it all came together as one. The fans got pissed off, and that was it. We had a good run in Europe, but domestically we were shocking.
We were. I mean, if you look at the, you know, we finished 25 points off back for all last season, didn't we? You know, where, you know, by all accounts, if you listen to some fans, we'd strengthened over the summer, so there was absolutely no sign of this coming, was there, this season coming. We expected a little dip, given Europa, but to sort of go and completely, you know, mess it up the way we did in the league was disappointing. And we just didn't get going, and I think personally, I think everyone had a stinker, from coaching, from the manager, you know, we can go into the board, but that'll be for later. But certainly down to the players, it didn't matter, wasn't helped by the fact that his key players simply barely turned up.
Didn't perform. We did, to be honest, man, we did have injuries, didn't we? But, you know, looking at his team selection sometimes, Barkley out wide, Naismith out wide, he's accommodating for the number 10 now. We can't accommodate for Christian Atsu. It didn't work out, let's be honest. Gareth Barry looked out of his depth on numerous occasions this season. Jagielka, as we talked about before, Mark, for about 6 months of the season, he was awful. Absolutely awful. He turned it round, fair play. I loved Jagielka, and he got played in the season because he turned it round, but Everton had to turn it round.
Yeah.
Coleman and Baines, by their own standards, probably disappointing for long portions of the season.
It's like you can't really go to town on him because there's a lot of people there, the favourites. You know?
It's like McCarthy when you had a go at McCarthy.
Well, you've seen that, he's a lot of people's favourites, and quite rightly so, he's a good player. But, you know, Coleman and Baines, is it all right to say that? I thought they were absolutely woeful for most of the season. Coleman turned it around better than Baines,
There's no one, Mark, though, you can say was head and shoulders and say, yeah, they were consistent.
No one stood out. John Stones, for me, maybe he's the only one who stood out. And even he had a few stinking games, didn't he?
But his age and his emergence will make him stand out anyway, yeah.
He's a marvellous talent, absolutely Rolls-Royce of a player.
But there's no one, the manager, anyone, any playing staff, you wouldn't say there was no level of consistency throughout. Yeah. Lukaku got his act together, I would say Jordan the latter, say maybe latter third, third or maybe a bit more. Yeah. And, you know, 20 goals speaks volumes, and I know we've spoken about this before, Mark, but he's a young lad, he's 21, 22, 20 goals for a poor Everton side.
It's summer time, 20 and 41 games, which one and two for a team like that. Lukaku really stepped up back this Christmas, didn't he? He thought he stepped up to the plate when we needed someone to. He showed his class, he scored a couple of vital goals, didn't he? You know, I know in the club they didn't come so much, but he was one player that really stood up when we needed it. I thought Lukaku, remember, to me, you know, over the year, that time he needed one.
Definitely. And what about, there's a couple of other pointers, Mark, the season. Obviously, we went through the games, but we haven't gone through the actual things, what happened in between. Martinez apparently fell out with Samuel Eto'o, Sylvain Distan. Well, I think it was Graham Jones, but Sylvain Distan was the rumour. But what do you make of that? I mean, they're senior players.
Absolutely.
Vastly experienced players. Is that a clash of personalities?
I think so, or a clash of maybe Martinez's stubbornness maybe coming into play here off the pitch. I don't know. I don't know what went on, to be honest, but it's clear now, you know, there was a massive problem given the games at all when Distan started after them rows, you know. We don't know if they've got frustrated with Martinez, if they, you know, but certainly they're influential figures in the dressing room, aren't they? Certainly with young players, you know, Distan's usually experienced. Eto'o is a world name. Well, we don't know what kind of impact these are.
Let's be open and honest about that, Mark. We've both heard various things. I mean, the fallout with Distan is apparently he got sent home from training and called a disgrace.
Yeah.
Graham Jones apparently nearly had a fight with him. That's rumours I've heard.
It's not the best team bonding exercise you'll have.
Samuel Eto'o apparently went round the younger members of the squad and said, this manager is not what you need. He's gonna ruin your career.
You know,
I know the rumours have said he wanted to play every week, and if he didn't get guarantees about playing every week, even though he's an old man, to be fair,
yeah,
you would have thought he would have enjoyed, you know, a few nights in a Malmaison and putting his feet up, but fucking hell. Apparently he said that, and then he went off to Italy.
There's far too much mystery around what really went on, but the proof's in the pudding. They didn't start the game, they barely featured, didn't they, after their incident or perceived incidents, and that tells you everything you need to know. There was obviously a major problem with this time and Eto'o, that's why Eto'o got shipped off, and this time got a sort of token gesture against Tottenham in the last game of the season, didn't they, to come on and say to that, and that was about it.
And I don't think, to be honest, Samuel Eto'o played for a blink of an eye compared to Sylvain Distan, so
yeah.
I'd like to focus on Distan, Mark.
Yeah.
What's your opinion on it, just as a good buy? So.
Distan, a decent player, I wouldn't go overboard like some blues do, saying he's a, he was a great, he was a good player, for me, he was always a poor man's Lescott for me, you know, I loved Lescott when he was playing for Everton. Distan was an able deputy, that's what I'll say, nothing spectacular. A few horror moments along the way, you know, City United, a few years back, I remember. But Distan, you know, pretty much, we've had a lot worse players than Distan. He was a good servant for Everton. I know that's no comparison, but, you know, yeah, he deserved to send off two of his not appearances, you know,
I think
at the time when we had a good side.
I think he definitely deserved one final appearance rather than being ushered out the back door with no recognition. And I do think he was a good player, Mark, to be honest. I think he was a really athletic player. He wasn't great with the ball on his feet, but he wouldn't play in the Premier League for that long if he were awful, put it that way.
Fair play to him,
and I wish him good luck. So about this, then I think, obviously, he had that in our hearts and our mouths during his 5 or 6 years in the club. But what centre half didn't? That's what I'm going to say. So, won't dwell on it much, but all credit to you, Distan, and good luck in the rest of your career. You have one. Samuel Eto'o doesn't give a fuck what I'm saying anyway. He's laughing his head off at some.
Sampdoria with a big smile on his face.
He's doing numerous R&B.
It's almost like the smiling assassin by the time you let up from what you'd have heard, isn't it?
Absolutely. I can imagine in some of the young players in that mixed cult as well. You know, the Spurs fella's not good for you, and of course they're going to listen to Cribs.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Anyway, some other pointers from the season. Injuries, yeah. Mark. Tommy Abbott, does he still exist?
Not for me, he doesn't, but he certainly still, no, I think under 10 appearances all season, Tommy, but, you know, great saving for the club, let's get it right, but, you know, he's a player that we shouldn't be looking at. He shouldn't even be a feature anymore for Everton.
That's it then, okay, no more. Brian Oviedo?
Yeah, still dining out on the United game, but far too injured, made a glass now, so we've missed, not really missed him for me. Garbutt was a better option at left back than Oviedo, but... No, I like Dobby on his side, but he's just become injury prone as we go.
Darren Gibson.
You know, how good was Gibson when he was playing for us? You know, you've got how good
stayed,
he was
on the
ball. I don't think he will. No. I think I can see Ed Gibson retiring or maybe down the league.
I think it's a real shame about Darren Gibson.
He's a really talented player, isn't he? You know what is that?
Hibberton and Oviedo, I'm not too concerned about, but Darren Gibson, I completely agree.
Yeah.
Quite sad to be honest when you think about his career. He's still relatively young in terms of football.
It's like the same sort of disappointment we had with Joe Parkinson a little bit, isn't it? You know, when his career was ended so quickly. Gibson, really, you know, really surprising amount of ability on the ball, didn't he? You know,
I think he proved that this season. Yeah. He got in and he drove the midfield on, to be honest. You know,
I agree, yeah.
You can see how he's, you know, different midfield on this one, obviously some different, but a couple of other pointers, Mark.
Yeah.
Aaron Lennon.
Oh yeah. He was a real shining light for me, Aaron Lennon, of the season, you know, disappointment. Lennon's attitude, I thought, in a team that war with itself, I thought Lennon's attitude was first class. I thought he came in, he wanted to do well, he wanted to make an impression, and he showed in his performances, didn't he? You know, his energy, and not only defending, but, you know, the amount of attacks that, you know, certainly Newcastle at home, he was always looking to get on the ball and hurt teams, wasn't he? You know, that penalty he won, again, was
Newcastle,
but he was fantastic that day, you know. Yeah, Lennon, I really hope to see Lennon back, but suddenly I think he wants to come back, doesn't he?
Well, there's talk that he wants, you know, he wants to do everything he can to get back here, but, you know, obviously it's Premier League football and agents and transfer fees.
And Everton, yeah.
So I think, especially with signing cleverly lately, they could get Lennon in, they're two smart moves then. And early doors, if they could get them in, get Lennon tied up in July when the transfer window's open. I'd feel really more pleased about them too. Young, I know Lennon's not as young as Cleverley, but still relatively young, English, hungry players with points to prove, and that's what I want to see. One or two players who
completely agree.
They're not just coming here because it hasn't worked out here or whatever.
They want to establish themselves.
Exactly. And that's what I sort of decided to say about Cleverley today, which we'll come to in a minute, Tom Cleverley. But other points from this season, the penalty debacle.
Absolutely farcical.
We talked about it a little bit earlier, Mark, but Morales missing, Barkley missing. What was wrong with just leaving Leighton Baines on the penalties?
You know, that missing each night, was it really that criminal? 14 straight penalties that went in the back of the net. He misses one and then all of a sudden there's an absolute mess over who takes penalties. I don't know what's happened there, to be honest, whether Baines has lost his confidence. I doubt it, because he took one of the penalties he's out, you know, scored against, I think it was West Ham, wasn't it? He scored.
But the thing is, with Roberto, was bullshit after that.
And I
was a wash again.
No,
it's like, what are you trying to say?
Yeah. Say it's fine when it's not. There was clearly something wrong there, wasn't there, with Morales? It was a mutiny, to be honest with you.
When you hear about Naismith trying to grab the chokehold in the tunnel after that, you think, well, you'd expect nothing else from your teammates, though. No, you've done that for an 11-a-side football team. You'd expect nothing else, you know.
But it ultimately cost us 3 points in that game, didn't it? You know, ridiculous.
Sacrifice the top half finish for that, Mark.
We could have finished 8. Yeah, it's still embarrassing that, to be honest.
So obviously this season, a bit of a write-off, Mark.
Yeah.
We've gone through an awful lot of stuff there in the last hour and a half.
Yeah.
What would you change ahead of next season in terms of on-field matters?
I'm glad you said that, because I could do a whole podcast and watch it.
No, you could, and you know, I've got to get over it. So.
No, on the field, I just think we need a lot more energy into the team. We need a lot more pace. I think Aaron Lennon. Aaron Lennon, Delafoe's rumoured to be close to coming back. That, I'd be absolutely made up if that happens, to be honest. But I think for all Delafoe's faults, we missed him this season badly. We just need a lot more, to be honest, more brave signings. We need more pace in the team. We need more youthful exuberance players. Like Tom Cleverley, who can play at the highest level, but haven't quite managed to get there. And I think that, you know, we need players like that who want to make a want to prove themselves that good sub park, you know.
So
why players like that hungry players?
Can you see Delafoe happening?
I don't know. If you listen to Twitter, we were signing Xavi last season, if you listen to Twitter, but it's obviously rubbish. I don't know. Delafoe certainly didn't get a look in at Sevilla Christmas onwards. I just think some players fit perfectly, don't they, at certain clubs, and Delafoe certainly took to us, and we took to him. I think it'd be great for everyone.
Do we need him, or because we've got McGeady?
I'm not going to dignify that with an answer.
I honestly can't see it happening. I'd love to see Delafoe come back.
I hope it does.
As a prediction, I just can't see it happening, but I'd love it.
Yeah.
I'd absolutely love it, because I just love the way he embraces football and the way he had us on the end of our seats. And not only him, you know, don't forget,
yeah.
Gareth Barry hit the ground running when he came in on us, and Romelu Lukaku did. That season was phenomenal, as Roberto says, yeah.
Yeah.
But
we need that back again, to be honest. Delafoe was a big part of that.
Is there a reason why Delafoe's not getting a regular spot? I mean,
well, there obviously is, yeah.
Obviously Barcelona, yeah, but
I think Unai Emery is not a soft manager, and he's not someone who's going to suffer fools, is he? So I think maybe Delafoe needs to work on his delivery and his attitude. Maybe, I don't know, he didn't show any attitude problems at Everton. But maybe he needs to get his head down and work harder if he's going to be a top player. He's obviously got the talent.
Yeah.
100%, yeah.
It's just how much it costs, but I'll just talk about him coming back on loan even for another season, whether that brings his price tag down again, because he'll have another less contract,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And another year's less contract. But we'll see. Silly season. Tom Cleverley.
Yeah. Again, it's underwhelming. I can't sit here and say it's a great signing. I'm made up with it. I'm over, you know, over the moon. It's a signing, like I said before. Tom Cleverley is eager to establish himself. He's just got back into the England setup. That's good for us. And I think Cleverley has certainly got the talent. It's just whether he can show it in a chair. I certainly hope he does. I disagree totally with people slating him before he's even kicked the ball. Not players like that, where we haven't expected much. Kevin Campbell, you know, being one where he turned up and set the world alight. Tom Cleverley is a super Kev, but he could have a great impact on us, and we've got to give the lineup a chance. We've got to get behind him with support.
There's no other option, though, is there? You can't not get behind a lad. I mean, I've tried to say that today myself, and
yeah.
I've seen comments and people saying he's not good enough, and that's fair enough. And as I say before, everyone's entitled to an opinion, but I think everyone, I'd like to think I watch as much Premier League football as the next man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are maybe basing their opinions on Match of the Day and what they've maybe seen or not seen.
I agree.
Perception. And I spoke to a United fan there this afternoon, and I'll publish his views on Twitter probably tomorrow, and he said a few things quite mixed about him. But to be honest, I just think the lads coming into, you know, a decent age, and still relatively young, 25. If you look at the rest of our midfield, Mo Bezic, Ross Barkley, James McCarthy, you know, Gibson and Barry, maybe not going to be around for much longer.
It's the right kind of signing,
I know we've signed the likes of Tim Howard and Neville and what have you from United in the past, and we pick up their reserves, but I just think the move's right, a right fit for him. He needs to come in and prove himself, and I like to think he tried to prove himself at Villa. He knew he could probably get a better club than Villa.
Yeah.
With all due respect, I remember when they thought they were going to get Moyes as well a few years ago.
I know, I remember
Villa, to be honest.
I've had a problem with Villa. I've had a problem since actually Young scored in the 95th minute.
Yeah.
I've hated them since then.
Massive club, Andy. But to be fair,
they're like us.
Yeah, they get the big fan base. I cleverly said all the right things, and probably put in the right performances, and probably had a key part in keeping them in the league.
Well, you'd hope he's on a bit of a crest of a wave.
Yeah, I think Everton more as a realistic club for him to sign for. I just think.
And let's not forget, Mane's got the best out of him
for Wigan.
I don't want to say that name, but yeah, he's another Wigan player, but Mane's
certainly the best out of him. Let's be honest, even if we just sign him so we can look at his beard, then maybe that's out. But that's one major thing.
Yeah.
It's good to see Everton make an early business plan.
It is.
And there's obviously a long couple of months to go before we start the season again. How confident are you that we can actually get players in?
Do you know what? I wish I wasn't so old and so long in the tooth with the sort of current regime at Everton that I wasn't dreading the summer. But you always have this sense of optimism that things will be different. I've not seen much reason for that optimism, to be honest, but I do hope that things. You know, signing cleverly is a good start. I just hope we can build on it and make some signings that say to the fans, look, we are serious. We do want to compete. We do want to make a difference and, you know, and challenge for trophies and all that. But, you know, without getting into a board debate, which, you know, I love to do, you know, it's going to be very difficult.
We're leaving the ball on the shelf tonight, don't mind.
Yeah, we are. No, but you're right. But I'm hopeful, as ever, that we can do some good business. Yeah.
So am I. I mean, after that season, I'll take anything. Any little bit of hope, and I'm taking hope out of the top cover. So I must be on medication.
Absolutely.
We asked the fans if anyone's still listening by now.
Thanks for still listening.
Because I know I'm not. Describe Roberto Martinez as 2 years in charge in 4 words.
Well, Ross Grumby for unique, phenomenal, special talent. I think that's maybe a hit to sarcasm in that.
I think so. Is he maybe describing Tim Howard?
Well, everything Tim Howard can know.
FM92 said good, bad and ugly. I would completely agree with that.
My favourite one is Sound Dave 1981. Probably not that phenomenal.
Yeah. The amount of times that phenomenal gets mentioned in this is just
it's phenomenal. It's hilarious.
Everton, Canada. Seems to always be on a plane, by the way, if you're listening, that lad on Twitter. You're seem to always between. I'm sure he's on a drugs run between Canada and Liverpool.
His air miles are something special, to be honest.
Phenomenally stubborn and average, he said.
Yeah, also we've got Chris Harry. Four great, then deluded bullshit.
Kev Dev 9 continues that theme. He says, good, then fucking shit. Well, I did say 4 words, so to be fair.
And if I could swear, because I don't really swear on this, I'd tone it down a little bit. Andy Martin, but absolutely brilliant, fucking shite. Which I think is Everton to a T under Roberto Martinez.
Yeah, Mark Wright says, not Mark Wright, I'm the only way he's actually, by the way. Mixed, frustrating, predictable, and potential. Jack Bover says, yet another false dawn.
Yeah, well, I can see that, absolutely. And WAPO 1878, 2 years is enough.
So he just wants, he's seen enough of Roberto.
Yeah, wants a change of management here.
Goodison Falls says, typical of Everton FC. Sir Dave Stevens says, frustratingly inconsistent and confusing. Yeah. Probably a bit like a conversation with me and you, Mark.
Absolutely. Ultimately confusing.
Jamie and Wallacey.
Saying, no phenomenal plan B. For me, that sums a lot of it up.
Definitely.
Extreme stubbornness. Definitely. Hasn't helped us whatsoever from the bit.
Another one there with Myth Joff 1878 says, Tim Howard isn't unique. He might be a fucking high five and people are growing a beard, like, but. That's about it, to be honest.
Yeah. Even Tim Howard's wonder saving in Southampton, which got, you know, a lot of plaudits, was from him being in a phenomenally bad position to start with.
You've just said phenomenal.
I'm looking at so many phenomenals on that sheet of paper, I couldn't say anything else.
So overall, Mark, it was a disappointing season.
Yeah.
Very much the highs and lows of Everton in the last 24 months.
Absolutely. It was a season I'm glad to wash my hands off. A season that sort of deflated everything, you know. We know there's a lot of things going on off the pitch. Just follow my Twitter if you want to see me views on it. But
don't. Honestly, don't. I'm saying that. But if you want someone to talk to, do.
I will respond to everybody. But let's be honest, Mark. It's nice to get away from it, and let's just hope that next season is a lot more positive and a lot more optimistic than what's gone on last season.
Definitely. I mean, I think we're all hopeful. I think we were all hopeful this time last summer, though. and it unfortunately fell away. Now people have laid the blame on Europa League, lack of silence, the board, Roberto being stubborn. There's a concoction of sort of people finger pointing and blaming. I think a whole mix of that is probably, you could touch on all of that really. The manager has been stubborn. Off field, there's issues. There's top players haven't performed, and maybe the expectations level went up, and Europe obviously.
Maybe no expectation next season will help us, you know, surprise a few people again. But Roberto Martinez, if he's going to stay in charge of everything, he's certainly got to learn his lesson from last season. A lot of lessons to be learned here.
I just don't think he can afford a 2 or 3 months in the season that's coming up.
I don't think we can afford another 2 or 3 months of that.
Another two or three months of erratic.
I agree. Because
otherwise, obviously, the season ticket sales are still flowing in. The fans will still be there, Mark.
Absolutely, yeah.
Evertonians are very demanding, and rightly so. They want the best for this club. And at times last season, we certainly didn't get it.
No, and you can only hope that the key players and sort of the new signings come in and they make a difference to what we want to do next season. There is no Europa League. There's no excuse, to be honest with you, next season. But we've got to get it right, and that needs a number of things to be working over the summer, from the board right down to the manager. We need to be innovative, and we need to be ruthless in the transfer market, for me, absolutely.
Definitely, and I think with the departures of Distan and Alcaraz, with all due respect to Distan, we're getting rid of some of the dead wood there. The transfer policy, I'm hoping, is bringing not just freezing loans, it's actually looking to invest in the squad like we have in recent years with the likes of John Stones, Mo Bezic, Romelu Lukaku, young, hungry players coming through.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Cleverley is a smart addition. I'm trying to be hopeful here, Mark. I'm trying to be upbeat.
It's even a grand job.
I'm trying to think, we need a centre-half.
We do.
We need a goalie. We need a winger and a striker. I know every club in the Premier League will say their positions, but
we essentially need
a centre-half and a goalie.
Yeah.
And if we could be very fussy, we could do with a striker and a winger.
I agree completely. Let's just hope we get them. Let's just hope that he's working on a few deals to improve the squad, because I think for his own future that he needs that as well, as much as for our own sanity. We can't go into another season.
I just hope we're not sitting here, Mark, in October, November, saying, "Oh, we're waiting for Pienaar or Osman or Magidi to come back from injury," because there'll be like a new signing.
We do not want to be saying that. It's been saying that for far too long as it is.
I know. We may as well stay this out for 2 hours now, Mark. So, if anyone's listening to this,
thanks so much for
this long.
Listening.
We'd just like to say thanks for everyone for listening this season. You can find us on SoundCloud, Everton Fan Focus, iTunes, search Everton Fan Focus. This is obviously an association with EverntonArtWe.com, so you can find us on there.
Yeah.
Mark, there was one last thing I wanted to talk to you about for the last 10 minutes. Is the Echo podcast that was recently released?
Yeah. A lot of was made of it. I went to the meeting, like yourself was there, and I was made up from our point of view that as fans that we got our point across to the Echo. There was no pussyfooting around the issue. There was no niceties, to be honest with you. It was civil, but that was about it. I think Evertonians told the Echo straight about the absolutely scandalous coverage of everything, their apathy towards not questioning the board. They openly said they went after Peter Johnson with a record. For me, this board's record is 10 times worse than his. They didn't. I thought we got our points across, but I'm not sure what much difference it made to the overall thinking of the Echo and all that. And I think, given their coverage after that, it shows that possibly they're not pertaining. I don't know why they're not pertaining. I don't know why they fancy getting in bed with the club when they'd rather, they can see what we can see, that this club deserves a hell of a lot better than what's going on. I just hope that, we've made strides in getting the meeting. I certainly don't think Evertonians held back in that meeting. We did ourselves justice. So, I'll stop breathing in a minute. But
I wanted to hear you say, Mark.
It's such a subject for me at the moment that I think that Everton don't get a fair representation, certainly in the local media. Liverpool were questioned, Liverpool's owners were questioned after they went out to Villa in the Cup. Liverpool's owners are developing Anfield, they've invested millions into the squad, and yet our owners have absolutely not done anything. Three failed ground moves, not improved goods, not done a thing to move us on as a football club. If you want to thank Doug Henry for were saying Lukaku, you might as well thank Rupert Murdoch, because that's where the money came from. I just think, as a board, they've done nothing. And the Echo's apathy hasn't helped the Everton fan base, and that a lot of people still think that nothing is wrong with us.
I think, personally, Mark, I went, obviously I wasn't invited, but I went on behalf of someone else.
Yeah.
You were personally invited. I've seen a lot of shit, to be honest, directed towards you in recent weeks. I think it was unjust. There's a lot of Everton franchise that went there. A lot of people who kept their mouths shut, a lot of people who actually were outspoken. I said one or two things, but my overall opinion is of it, we're in any better place after this Echo meeting than we were before it, which is unfortunate. There was dialogue with the Echo about inviting people down there and recording of it and what have you. They've released it and they've tried to provide balance to that. That's fair enough. They can do what they want in terms of editorial. There was no signatures, there was no agreement in place. But I find it, it's a continuation of bullshit with the Liverpool Echo. We'll carry on doing our own thing, as I'm sure only any other Evertonians and fan sites, fan groups, people who write, people who air their opinions will do. At the moment, it's a hot topic.
It is.
But I just think Evertonians can't rely on the Liverpool Echo for any sort of reporting towards anything critical towards Everton.
Completely.
No matter how much what they said, Dave Prentice, Greg O'Keefe, fair enough for them for inviting us down. But at the end of the day, you're never going to get that from the Liverpool Echo.
No.
And I think maybe so, people asking questions of them is sort of bringing it to the table a bit more and bringing the subject up.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, we're all banging our heads against a brick wall with the Liverpool Echo. And we have to, if people want to make changes at Everton and want to see changes, they have to go after the club and the national media.
Yeah.
Because the local media certainly don't want to report it, and it's down to the likes of yourself, me, other people who want to see changes. And, trying to end on a sour point, although the last 2 hours has probably been a
sour enough.
Bit depressive.
No, but this is current, this is what's going on right now, man.
I sat in that meeting, Mark, and I think people are going to shrug their shoulders, they're going to be defensive, they're going to say, well, we've done this in the past and we've done that in the past, but at the end of the day, it's an absolute...
Bullshit, to be honest. Well, the proofs, they haven't questioned the board, they haven't gone after them, they've held back, they've sort of, I don't know, maybe goaded Evertonians with some of the headlines over the years. We all know Osman went go-karting. There was a big article about a lad who got the wrong name put on his shirt, if you remember, a few weeks ago. I feel like there's a tsunami going on, and the Echo are passing it off as a hot summer's day. I don't think that's a rubbish analogy, I know. But, I think there's a lot of concern at Everton, and none of it's getting represented in the media. Absolutely none of it. Why? I don't know. Only the Echo know. And I think one day it'll come out why they're being so apathetic towards this board.
To be honest, they're doing that thing, aren't they? Tell Ali about the editor.
Which was,
the thing is, Mark,
90% Evertonians.
If you speak to other people on Mark, it's too little, too late. You know what I mean? A few hashtags on Twitter isn't going to change the way the Echo print things. And I'm not saying give up your protest or give up this and that. But to me, it's just like they're trying to engage with people. Maybe because Evertonians are kicking up a fuss about... And I'm one of them, to be honest, my opinions on them. But I just think we're never going to get anywhere with them.
No.
So the only way to do about it is, I don't know, maybe go to the national press, go against the club. People are not happy. Some people are happy.
Sporadic protests. I think a lot of fans want to scream out now. A lot of fans
That imagery that appeared on Twitter yesterday might speak volumes. And surely now, Even the most
staunch,
sane Evertonian who sits there would say, no, I'm pro for this and I'm pro for that. If you see those facts, because they are facts, let's be honest, displayed in front of you, then you must be blind if you don't see the failings. And to be fair, not everyone will be like, well, I've seen them and, I want to make a difference. But other people do want to make a difference and they want more for the club. And
As I said before,
we can sit here all night talking about it.
Could you, mate? We can only hope that there's a force for change that means for a competitor. That's all we can hope for. But
in the meantime, we'll just discuss, obviously, what's going on throughout the summer.
Absolutely.
Looking ahead to see if the fixtures come out next week, I think.
Yes, they do.
Looking ahead to that.
I can't believe it so soon.
I'm talking about on-field matters.
Absolutely.
I'll give us 8 minutes there, Mark.
That was a good platform, Matt. I feel a lot of fence has come off that spleen.
You can go home and sleep tonight.
Definitely on the couch, given the time.
Well, you haven't got them fellas outside your house now with the placard saying, where's the fucking Echo podcast, lad?
I've actually actually moved them in. They're in the spare bedroom on top.
Oh,
yeah, I won't have people stood out in the cold, no matter how much of Easter I've been having. But no, yeah, that was. I felt like a celebrity for a few days there, which was strange. And it was a celebrity who got a lot of abuse, technically.
Well, no,
I don't know. You stick your head above and you want to make a difference, I suppose. It's people then see you as a point of contact that they want to, have a go here for. That's fine. I totally got the frustration, to be honest with you. I thought it was pathetic the way
I completely get everyone's frustrations, yeah. Mark, but I thought I'd mention it now because it's a chance to actually have your say on it and say what actually happened in the interview, the meeting. What's happened since, and what could maybe happen in the future, and I think on Twitter you might not have that opportunity to sort of state your views over a tweet, whereas other people are saying, what about this, what about that, but at the end of the day, we all knew in that Echo meeting what it was going to be like, it was going to turn out to be, and it's not going to answer all the questions, because the Echo have not answered any questions over the past 10-15 years about Everton. Now, I'm not going to do it now, but it's a start.
Yeah,
I'm hoping it's a start that we can sort of enter dialogue, and people who've maybe put their views across before me, I'm just, as I say, I'm jumping on board. I'm not taking any credit for anything, and neither are you.
No, absolutely not.
It's a start, and to be involved in it is a real eye opener. So
yeah, let's hope that we get what Everton Football Club and its fans deserve, and that is an Everton that is competitive, and owners who want to take the club in the right direction and make us, the best that we can be.
At the end of the day, we all want for a better Everton, don't we, Mark?
Same thing. Goal falls in, we all react the same way.
Talking about that Everton season, probably sums it up, doesn't it?
It does. Great
fun, though. It was. I would like to say it was good to talk back through the last 10 months.
Yeah.
Hopefully we've covered everything. If there's anything we've missed, let us know. Obviously give us any feedback, download on SoundCloud, iTunes, find us on evertonartweek.com, find us on Mark's Twitter feed with his fan club, and we'll draw it to a close and say good night.
Thank you very much for listening.
Here's to another season. Thanks for everyone who's listened this season.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.